This is the Patty Vasquez Show. Follow me on Twitter, Patty Vasquez, on 720 WGN.
Some people see the revolution, but most only see the girl. I can lose my hard-earned freedom if my fear defines my world. I declare my independence from the critics and the stones. I can find my revolution. I can learn to stand alone.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday night. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're so thrilled that you're hanging out with us. We've got a lot to cover tonight, as I mentioned during the crosstalk with Carm. We are going to talk a little bit of fun stuff. We'll talk about some serious stuff, important things. I know the fair tax doesn't sound all juicy and exciting for some folks, but I do think there's some important aspects of it that we should break down for you a little bit. Coming up later, we'll talk all things vegan with Elizabeth Alfano, and I'm excited to have, she's just flying right here, Vivian. She's coming right in. Come on over and sit down. We have with us our friend from Shepherd College as well, Brian Page, joins us in studio. And, you know, we talked a few weeks ago with our good friend Brian Page, who is the, was it the senior vice president of wait, hold on a second, advancement at Shepherd's College. Oh, your chair, you can get a different chair. All right, you got to bring that microphone close to you then. Hello, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Did I get your title correct?
You did.
Excellent. Welcome back.
Well, I'm glad to be back. Thank you for inviting me back.
Didn't mean to race you in here. I'm like, get in here. Sorry, no. I wasn't paying attention to the news.
You're letting me be here, so that's great.
Andre's got the great news, and I was talking to Carm. Oh, it's lovely to have
been hanging out with you all along.
Well, I know you and I were both also going over our notes.
Right.
And making sure we get the information that folks need to know about Shepherd's College. But we'll settle in for a minute. I want to thank you for bringing your daughter tonight, Autumn Grace, who joins us in studio.
Oh, thank you.
And after the when I get a chance during the news at 10:30, I'll make sure I give you a tour, because we are so proud of our new studios.
Oh, she'll love that.
You know what we should do, too, at some point, if we have an opportunity, is maybe bring some students down, maybe some who live in the community, if you want to do a tour.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Do you think that'd be fun?
Yeah, I'll load up some people and bring them personally.
Yep, I would love that.
That sounds fantastic.
We talked last time a little bit about our experiences raising our boys. You and I both have sons who, when we travel, people might stare at us. When we go out to eat, people might
Absolutely.
Say things. Our children are intellectually disabled. I don't know how do you, mm-hmm. What's the language that you use?
We usually say, for Shepherds, it's usually intellectually disabled, mm-hmm. developmental disabilities. Like in our son's case, he really has cognitive disabilities.
Right.
You know, so it kind of all lumps together in the same category.
Because, you know, some folks are sensitive to language, and they, certain of them have, certain people have alarm bells. They're like, oh, what does it mean by, what do you mean by that? And parents like you and me, you know, we think about the future. We often, you know, wonder if our children will ever have careers. When you found out about Shepherd's College, what was that moment like?
Oh, wow, Patty. I've told you before, just off air, just that it was so emotional for us, you know, one, going and doing the tour. But I think the biggest thing is that you don't, when you're in the midst of it and you understand as a mom that you're so focused on that, you sometimes don't even realize other things that are actually out.
Yes.
So to think that, you know, 11 years ago that someone came up with this idea that, hey, we should have a college that really is going to train students with disabilities and vocational skills and social skills and, you know, provide employment opportunities. So when we heard about it, we're like, wow. And then to think for us, you know, living in the suburbs, while this is an hour and a half away, we don't have to put them on a plane all the way across the country. Mm-hmm. We could actually drive up and really visit. So it was pretty overwhelming. And walking around the campus, I mean, we started crying because it was just stunning to think, like, wow, our son might have a college opportunity like his older brother did.
Right.
And now my daughter that's here, you know, also being in college. And so Benjamin's getting a chance to experience that.
For those who didn't have the opportunity to hear our last conversation that we, which is available, by the way, on our podcast, mm-hmm. you can look for Patty Vasquez and Shepherd's College and Brian Page, of course, the Senior Vice President of Development.
You're the star, though.
Oh, please stop. the star of this conversation really is Shepherd's College. And for those who aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about the program, how long the program is and what the opportunities are for the students that go to Shepherd's.
Okay. Well, Shepherd's is a 3-year post-secondary accredited program, obviously for students that have intellectual and developmental disabilities. The three-year program really focuses on horticulture, culinary, and technology. It's a residential program, so the benefit is that students from all over the country, we have international students, they actually get to come on to this campus in Union Grove, Wisconsin, which is kind of like a little small town of 5,000 people, very, very safe. You know, we kind of joke and say it's a little more kind of Mayberry-like. It does have a McDonald's, you know, but it's kind of nice because it's a great place where the community can embrace the students have a chance to really grow and learn. So I think that's what makes it really so special, that it's not like they're in a major city, but yet at the same time, 30 minutes south of Milwaukee, basically an hour from downtown Chicago. So, I mean, it's in a great spot. And then tons of opportunities. Students get to do Special Olympics and all sorts of activities, field trips, I mean, projects on campus. I mean, it's tremendous.
And how can folks visit the campus? Because when I went there, I mean, it was like a whole new world for me. I thought, oh my, who knew this was so close to Chicago?
Exactly. You know? That's
who
right.
Knew? So there are opportunities for folks to take a tour of the campus. You have some open houses coming up?
Yeah. I actually could probably give you a couple of the dates, but yeah, we always have preview days, and then we have open houses.
The preview days are coming up. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the preview days, we have April 26th, we have May 10th, October 8th, November 8th. People can actually go online if they go to the website and look at you know, www.shepherdscollege.edu. Mm-hmm. All of that information is really there. We also have an open house that's coming up on May the 4th. You don't have to register. I mean, it's nice if we know that people are coming.
Right.
We provide, we have a Shepherd's Cafe. You know, it's Shepherd's Community Cafe that's in the bank right down the street that I think you got a chance to really see.
I did.
And so people can get some free coffee. Students actually work at the cafe and serve at various individuals that are coming in, obviously through town, but also on campus. So, yeah, we'd love for people to come out. I think one of the biggest things is if someone gets an opportunity like you did, and you probably could share your own experience, to come on campus and to see it, and you get the activity, and, you know, you watch the students interacting and going to their classes, and the relationships that are being built, and sitting in the cafe and eating and going to their dorms and apartments and things like that. It's life-changing.
Well, and the confidence that is built there is priceless.
Right, it really is.
You know, especially for individuals, you know, when kids are going through the school, let's use CPS as an example, from the age of 3 years old until they graduate, whatever age that is, because I think it goes all the way, you can go all the way up to 22,
correct,
depending on your abilities. Mm-hmm. For the parents, every year they have these meetings, the individualized education plan. Yeah, and you're sitting around a table and everyone's, you know, writing down their notes and coming up with these goals. And then to go into this environment where they're living in dorms, they're living, you know, in like a quad, and then they're living, you know, with one roommate in an apartment.
Correct.
It's modeled after the experience, you know, everybody else has, and that's really the goal.
Right. That's, you know, right. Well, part of the main focus that Shepherd's was really kind of established under was appropriate independence, because you look at every individual, whether it's your son or our son. I mean, everybody's, I mean, it's almost ironic that even for us in the natural, basically full ability world, is that we all have different abilities. And so you take individuals that have a variety of special needs, we don't want to lump them all in one bucket and expect that everybody does exactly the same thing. So it's kind of nice that they can come, and because of his appropriate independence, they get to kind of grow in their own way and kind of in their own time frame.
Here's a great question from a listener, which is why I'm so glad you're here live.
Oh, wow.
You know, to have this conversation. From the 847, my special needs daughter is 24. Is she too old for Shepherd's College?
No, that's a great question. No, really, we don't go ahead and, like, really put restrictions on it. The main thing in terms of which, kind of as a sidebar to answer the question, is that it's the coolest thing to see families find out when they get the actual letter in the mail that their child has been accepted. And so now we have all these different families that are videotaping their child actually opening up the letter from Shepherd's College, and you're seeing the parents and the kids, and they're celebrating and crying and all of that. But yeah, we look at, just depending on each student's situation, we don't have any students that are probably 60 years old, but I mean, depending on where they are, they go through the application process. process. There's at least specific things to see their level of reading ability and writing ability and things like that, and they go through the whole assessment, and then that makes the determination. So 24 definitely is not too old. They can call. They can call the campus. They can ask for me. Either of our recruiters, Eric Lindsay, Brian Canwright. We're more than happy to answer any questions anyone has.
And again, the preview day is coming up. There's a preview day coming up April 26th and May 10th,
correct,
which is coming up soon. And you'll get you'll receive a coupon for a free cup of coffee,
right,
from Shepherd's Community Cafe. And there's also a plant sales.
Right.
Well, that's great.
And the plant sales tie into that's actually done by the horticulture students.
Right.
And
part of the tour.
Right.
Yes.
Our AVP of marketing is already saying, it's always making comments that if someone comes, it's worth the drive because of the price of the plants.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely should come and check it out.
That's great. And then, so the preview dates are, again, April 26th and May 10th. You can go to shepherdscollege.edu to register, or the open house on May 4th, and there's no registration necessary, but they would like a little heads up,
right,
so they know how many folks will be there. The tours are given at 9:30, 10 a.m. It's 9:30 a.m. all in the morning, 9:30, 10, 10:30, and 11, and we hope folks can get out there. We're going to take actually, there's some more questions coming in, so we'll get to that in a moment. 312-981-7200 if you want to call or text us with any thoughts or comments. And I have a question about the open house. If folks are interested in supporting Shepherd's College, is that a way to also view the campus, or do you prefer that they kind of contact you in order to participate?
No, they're certainly welcome. We're always looking for people that really want to support, even tell about other students. They may have an interest in Shepherd's.
Right, like teachers maybe want to go there and take a look at what's down the road for their kids.
Exactly.
So we work,
you know, there's plenty of schools that come up.
Uh-huh.
My high school, which is in the south suburbs, they came up several months ago and brought a busload of students and a lot of their faculty and others that work with the student population, and it was just phenomenal. And so, you know, that ends up almost being a feeder, because then they can say, hey, maybe in your particular situation, your child might be a fit for Shepherd's College. So that's been cool.
Again, the website is shepherdscollege.edu. Our conversation with the Senior Vice President of Development at Shepherd's College will continue when we come back on 720 WGN. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, and we're so happy that you are. This week on Chicago's Best, no silverware allowed at the table. Chicago's Best is grabbing a tortilla. I don't know how I feel about this. I've read this several times, and I've heard it now. As though when I eat tacos, I don't have any silverware. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I don't use silverware when I eat tacos.
All right, well, then that's you. I always have silverware.
Do you?
Yeah. Because you know why?
Tacos?
A lot of stuff is going to fall off. You want to be able to get the rest of it. Now, what are you supposed to do? Use your fingers?
Okay,
beef into my face?
Maybe you can, you know, use another taco to help you.
You know, that's why you always ask for a spare tortilla. Good point. All right, fine.
There you go.
Silverware at home. Because Chicago's Best is grabbing a tortilla and loads of meat and toppings at Chicago's Best Tacos, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Making us hungry.
That's right. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and if you have someone in your life, maybe a friend, maybe a child, maybe there are some students that you have in your community that might benefit from a place like Shepherd's College, where individuals with intellectual disabilities are encouraged to reach their potential in so many different ways. And horticulture, that greenhouse is amazing, which is part of the tour coming up at the open house and the preview.
That's right.
And that greenhouse was just so wonderful. How many? I think there's like thousands of plants that the students are working on, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, which is great, because, I mean, you're really trying to teach them and train them just what it looks like to, you know, do floral arrangements. I mean, take care of yards. I mean, you know, businesses. I mean, all sorts of things. So, and they love it.
We are talking to Brian Page. He is the Senior Vice President of Development at Shepherd's College. And when I was there, someone who works there, I think, with landscaping, was formerly a student, I believe.
I can't think off.
Well, you've only been there for about 3 years, right?
Two.
Oh, I don't want to extend your stay.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they're like, wait a minute, he's going to ask for a raise. Wait, I want more time off now.
I have to raise the money.
A listener asks, if they can't make it to one of the open house or preview dates, is there a way to perhaps schedule a tour of the campus?
Yeah, it's not restricted. Mm-hmm. So somebody doesn't have to only come on a preview day or an open house. You can come, and there's plenty of people that, like you did.
Right.
I mean, so somebody can actually just go ahead and they could call. They could say, I'm going to be coming in town. Is it possible I can come by? So we have several staff that are prepared to go ahead and take someone around, give them tours. I mean, that's a nice thing that we do because, you know, sometimes it may not be a family that's tied to a student. It may be a donor. It may be a business that's interested in saying, hey, I wonder if there's some things that we can maybe partner with you. And so we strongly encourage that because I think that's so impactful when people actually get on the campus and see it.
That's it really is an eye-opening and a wonderful experience to meet some of the students, to take a tour. And this is, again, in southern Wisconsin, just across the border with Illinois. What's the name of the town again?
It's Union Grove, Wisconsin.
Union Grove, that's right. And another listener asks from the 815, does social emotional disability qualify?
It does.
Yes.
That's where really all the assessment process really comes in. So any student that is looking to potentially come to Shepherd's, the families end up working with the staff. They go through kind of the whole process of really seeing what the fit is. Because we have a combination, you and I have talked about, you know, students that have Down syndrome, students that have Asperger's, students that are autistic. You know, my son's situation is a little bit different. He didn't really have a diagnosis like that because he had a bleed at birth and so and had a shunt placed. So he was really diagnosed as really having cognitive delays. But everybody's situation is different. And so really you just look and see, you know, part of the process is that is a student going to be able to manage themselves, work within an environment? Can they follow instructions? You know, work as a team, interact with other students. But again, they're all different. And so, yeah, that definitely is not a disqualifier.
And for those who, again, perhaps missed the first part of the conversation, it is designed to be as familiar as everybody else has come to understand a college campus with classrooms, obviously, in different departments. And there is a dorm. There's a dorm where, you know, students are paired with a roommate and they have a common kitchen area. There's also obviously the cafeteria where folks can go to eat. And then that's for the first year. The second year, there's a two-bedroom.
This is sort impressive. You're doing fantastic.
Oh, but, well, it reminded me so much of going to, I mean, you know exactly what, like we said, traditional, right? The thing, the sort of, when you have a child that you're told earlier in their life that they will, you know, there's a world of nevers all of a sudden.
Exactly.
They're never going to do this. They're never going to live independently. They're never, you know, you start thinking all the things that are impossible.
That's right.
And when a door opens that tells you, no, so much more is possible.
Right.
It's really beautiful.
Oh,
was that what it was like for you for the open house?
Because Natalie and I, my wife, we went, and when we actually decided to go and do the open house, as I said, it was eye-opening.
Yeah.
I mean, really stunning. I remember when, after we went through and just, you see all of these different opportunities, you said kind of the world of the nevers.
Yeah.
And we had all that. You know, he's not going to walk. He's not going to talk.
Right.
You're just basically thinking that, boy, I mean, what's this life going to be like? And then people can also be very insensitive and cruel to another extent. But to go through the process and then be sitting kind of in the main building that we call the Finley Center, and then asking Benjamin, just what do you think? And he said, I'd love to go to college like Harold, you know, who's his older brother. And I'm like, wow, he was able to process that himself, that he wants to have these same opportunities. I mean, you know, because they want to live independently. Sometimes, unfortunately, and we've experienced it, as parents, you're so used to almost holding them back and coddling and protecting, and rightfully so. But yet, they want to be able to experience, you know, Benjamin wants to have an opportunity to drive.
Right.
Whether he's ever able to do that is a different story. But they see things that other people do, and they don't see themselves as being restricted. And so that it was really just a powerful experience for us. And then you're trying to figure out how do you make it happen.
When you come back next, I want to address some of the funding, too. I mentioned before that I will invite you back. But you know, briefly, there is funding.
That's good. So I didn't mess it up. I get to come back.
You get to come. Absolutely. But for those who are interested in finding out more as well, the information about funding and how you can maybe apply for grants and things like that is available on the website as well.
Right. And the fact, because we're accredited, I mean, that's a huge deal. So people can go ahead and just like, you know, we've talked about going to a standard college, university, you can go through and fill out FAFSA so people can get financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Pell Grants. I mean, there's all sorts of options
because
of the accreditation, which is huge. You know, a lot of schools, it could just be that it's just a program. But knowing that you specifically have those pieces in place really makes a huge difference. Excellent. And kids is, you know, Brian Canright, who I work closely with, our vice president of expansion, he starts off telling families, kids want to go to college.
Right.
And so when these kids that have intellectual disabilities can say, I want to go to college like my brother, you know, that means something. It's not just going to Shepherd's. It's going to Shepherd's College. When Benjamin first came home, that's all he was like, I'm in college now. That was a big, big deal. And it still is.
Let's help so many more kids say, I'm in college now.
Right. It really does.
Thank you so much. So we've been talking to Brian Page, the Senior Vice President of Development at Shepherd's College. Again, the dates that you want to know about to visit the campus, you can visit on preview days on April 26th or May 10th. There are going to be a few more in the fall as well. They would love for you to register so they know how many folks are going to show up. That's at shepherdscollege.edu. The open house is on May 4th. You don't have to register, but again, they'd like to know who's coming.
Right.
And the tours are in the morning one's at 9:30, 10 a.m., 10:30, and 11, and all visitors will receive a coupon for a free cup of coffee from Shepherd's Community Cafe, and there's a plant sale as well. Mm-hmm. And you can find out all that information, again, at shepherdscollege.edu. If you can't make it to one of those dates, there are opportunities to schedule a personal visit by contacting the college.
Right. And the other thing, too, Patty, is because the website is so robust. I mean, people can go, and you've seen some of those things. There's videos. There's also people can kind of have a virtual tour. So there's all sorts of other information that can still engage somebody that they can say, wow, didn't know this existed. I mean, they can see the dorms. They can see the homes for the second year students. They can see the apartments, you know, for the students going into their third year. So it really gives you kind of a nice visual picture of everything that's really going on.
I love what you guys do. I look forward to having you back.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. You're the best.
Thank you so much. Let's get a selfie before you go.
Oh, terrific.
More in a moment on 720 WGN. Earlier today, I heard I think it was Roper who said that Endgame is going to break the box office. Not box office records. I think, you know how people say
yes.
This is going to break the internet, Matt Fagerholm?
It is. I'm pretty certain it is.
It's going to break it.
Yes.
It's going to snap. What's that snapping sound? It's the box office.
All these individual moneymakers just all coming together for this one-time collision. And I just hope it's satisfying. You know, I was not satisfied by Infinity War. I was like, you know, Black Panther's still in the theater. Don't kill him off, you know, while he's just still in the theater in the next room. So, but I don't know. This could be the big crowd-pleasing. I mean, it's so manufactured. You're going to take away half the characters just to bring him back. I mean, who knows? Maybe there'll be a few surprises. I don't know.
Well, I saw Captain Marvel.
And what did you think of Marvel?
I would agree with you completely. Well, I enjoyed it. It is a bridge movie.
Me too.
It was there was a lot of fun action,
mm-hmm.
but it was very like now this, then this, then this, then this, then this.
Yes.
It was without sort of a heart. It didn't have enough heart to it, I didn't think. But,
no.
But I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I feel like now they owe her a movie. I really want something to be centered around her and less about, let's liberate this alien race. Let's drag all this other exposition to be this bridge between these two films. Like, let's now give her some breathing room. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Endgame might be an interesting showcase for her and how she kind of fits into everyone else's world.
Right.
So we'll see. And Brie Larson's a great actress. She's capable of great work. I just felt like it was her friend that Lashana Lynch, I think her name was. I mean, she was the one who was really bringing the emotional velocity of the film.
Oh, I agree. So, I agree with that completely. And it's hard to get over the CGI of Samuel L. Jackson sometimes.
To me, I thought it was
good,
as seamless as I've seen as far as like the de-aging goes. Like it looked like 1998 era Samuel L. Jackson. And I was stunned just how much they had to use him. Because usually when they do that, like they don't show them talking or they kind of look weirdly embalmed in the background. Like, no, there's Sam Jackson in the foreground talking. And
right.
It looked pretty good to me.
It was fun. And when she punches through all those missiles and then goes through the ship, I was like, okay, yeah, this is good. I needed this payoff.
Yes, definitely. Yes.
I enjoyed
that. And when she tells Jude Law, like, I don't owe you anything. I don't owe you. You know, I thought that was a good moment.
I don't have to prove anything to you.
I don't have to prove anything to you.
I wrote that down.
Yes, I don't have to prove anything to you. Exactly.
That was a good moment.
Yes.
Now, I watched a trailer of a movie that you posted about. So I watched a trailer for Hail Satan.
Oh, yes. Now, Hail Satan. Question mark.
Question mark.
Question mark.
Hail,
yes.
Satan.
Yes. Coming out in time for Easter. Yes. This was not a mistake.
So this seems more like an anarchy group rather than about worshiping the Antichrist.
It's interesting because, I mean, this is clearly, you know, an activist group that's just fighting for, you know, you know, trying to prevent the dissolution of the separation between church and state. You know, when you're putting Ten Commandments plaques in front of government institutions, it's like, you know, this is not what this was meant to be. It's like, you know, the whole idea of a Christian nation kind of rose in the 1950s. That was not really what it was in our foundation. So they're kind of bringing back to this idea of religious pluralism. It's like, well, you're going to have a Ten Commandments plaque, there, you know, in front of a government building, then we're going to bring our Baphomet statue out there. And so, you know, hey, the, you know, the devil horns, you know, exactly. Because right. we have just as much of a right to do this. So, but they're not really believing in Satan as a supreme being. It's just more like this symbol for the person who's taking this alternate path of viewing things is really kind of what it is. It's like we just have the freedom to think in ways that's not just in this Christian supremacist way. And it's not even like an anti-Christian group. It's just anti-fanaticism, anti, you know, right. only believing in one particular way.
And also, I heard in one of the interviews, you know, where, you know, people are acting as though this is a Christian country
yes.
when they're not necessarily upholding Christian values.
Exactly. Well, right. and I mean, if you're seeing some of the very hateful propaganda films, I don't need to name all of them, but, you know, PureFlix, you know, distributes most of them. You know, if you look at the seven tenets of the Satanic Temple, as they call it, it's so much more in line with what Jesus embodied to me mm. than what these films that are purporting to be Christian films are embodying.
By the way, I have a comedy special on PureFlix. Not kidding.
Oh, do you? Oh, I'm seeing this. No, but I'll be your first customer.
I am one of three. I'm one of three comics, and that's like a three comic. I can't get on Netflix, but I got on PureFlix, and a lot of people are wondering how that happened. It's a Christian streaming.
That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations.
I know. I feel like putting that video next to the video that I have, like, because, you know, there are other, obviously, snippets of bits that I've done.
Yes.
And they don't go side to side as seamlessly as you would think.
That's amazing.
There's some stuff that I talk about. They'd be like, really? You picked her for PureFlix? Okay.
Yeah, hey, well, you know, I'm giving them credit for, you know, classing it up with you.
So yeah. Sinbad was our host on that.
Really?
On that special.
Oh, that's
yeah,
interesting.
It was very
interesting.
Fun.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy?
That's my favorite film this year so far. It really, I think it's a brilliant film. Penny Lane is the name of the director.
Okay.
I mean, how can you not love her right away? Her name is Penny Lane.
Uh-huh.
It's edited by Aaron Wickenden, who also edited Won't You Be My Neighbor, some of the best documentaries, the Fred Rogers
documentary. Well, Paul's all in then. I bet Paul
Farhar
is going to love that one.
You just have the heavy hitters behind this film. So yeah.
I don't know if I want to say this out loud about Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Uh-huh.
I saw it.
Uh-huh.
I can see why it didn't get nominated. It was good. It was very good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, but maybe it was too, because maybe Paul was like texting me every day. Did you see it? Did you see it yet?
Yeah.
That I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I can see now why. There was some, I felt like there was something missing.
Sure.
Right? I feel like they sort of gave the why of, you know, his drive to want to make kids feel good, because it was very brief where they talked about his childhood.
Yes. Well, what's missing is him. What's missing is his personal story.
Yes.
And I feel like it was really more focused on the radical humanism behind, you know, the technique and his philosophy and this
yes.
idea of slowing things down and really making going against the grain of like the ADD addled sort of children's entertainment
sure.
at the time. So I think it was more interesting just about a profile of his approach. But it's true. There's a lot that's missing as far as what kind of father was he. And this was actually very, so we had Morgan Neville at Ebertfest, the director.
We showed
the film at Ebertfest. I was on stage actually with him at Ebertfest, and I read the letter that Fred Rogers wrote me when I was 5 years old and read it to the audience. I think I read it on your
so great.
Show
you did.
A few weeks ago. And so that was a wonderful moment. And I mean, I admire the film for at least bringing Fred Rogers back into the national consciousness at a time when we really need that sort of humanism, where it was not about, you know, Fox News tries to get on this case and saying, well, it was creating this narcissism. Narcissistic generation thinks they're just, you know, owed everything. And that's not what it was. It was that you have inherent worth. Every person has worth. Every person has
right.
value. And there's so many people who grow up, never hear that from their parents or never hear that from the world or look down because of economic reasons or something. And he was like, no, just forget all that. You have value.
Right.
And your voice matters. I mean, what is not to love about that?
Nothing to
yeah.
not love about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love what the film represents, but I agree. It's no minding the gap. I'll just say.
I thought you might say that. Paul
yes.
needs to see Minding the Gap so you can have your argument.
Minding the Gap should have won the Oscar.
Oh,
I'll keep saying it.
Period
keep
is not the end of a sentence.
Yeah, and I love period end of sentence. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic short
And it's available on Netflix, as is, Minding the Gap is on Hulu, I believe.
It's on Hulu, yes.
Yeah.
I know, a lot of the great documentaries are on streaming platforms now. It's amazing.
That was going to be my question about Hail Satan,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I think documentaries are moving to a new, I mean, people, in the same way they are consuming podcasts or,
yes.
you know, all the sort of different way of storytelling, documentaries are really occupying a new space right now.
They are, but I really hope people show up to the theaters when they show Hail Satan, because it's a great audience movie. It's like, it just reminds you of like the vintage Michael Moore days when a big audience got together and laughed and just they feel that communal sense of enjoyment. You know, like I remember seeing Fahrenheit 9/11 in the theater, and this was in like a kind of conservative area, and everyone stood up and applauded.
Really?
Like, I mean, when does that happen? I don't know.
I don't know if I've ever gone to a theater to see a documentary.
Mm.
I'm trying to think if I don't know if I've. Well, you don't. Of course, you don't know. You haven't been with me my whole life. Vivian, have you ever gone to a theater to see a documentary?
No, I have not. Actually, wait. Yes, I have, but it was a Greek film.
What was it? Counts. What was it?
Let me remember it.
Wow, so memorable.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a while ago.
Well, I think the with documentaries on streaming is that they're also in, you know, hour long or half hour, you know, there's a bunch of them. I mean, Disappeared in Plain Sight, is that the name of the one with the kidnapping? And someone made me watch Murder Mountain for a bit, and I was like, I can't.
So there's all these murderers. It seems to be that's what's clogging Netflix now. I'm like, I don't know if I want to see all the...
That's a really good point.
It's kind of queasy. Like, no. March of the Penguins made all that money, remember back
then?
Sure. And that's, you know, Disney's still trying to get the nature documentaries going, so...
That's fair. Oh. We'll continue our conversation when we get back. See, when we come back, we'll talk more about Ebertfest in Champaign.
Absolutely.
Which is my alma mater, Andrea Darlis, as well. I love the University of Illinois.
Such a gorgeous campus.
And I think that more folks need to visit Champaign and take their kids down there to think about going to college there, because a lot of kids are leaving the state.
I know.
Stay here, everybody. I know. Let's make it affordable. That's the problem.
Yes.
More in a moment with our guest, Matt Fagerholm from RogerEbert.com, as well as
Indie Outlook.
IndieOutlook.com. Thank you so much for coming back. I miss you.
Always a pleasure.
It's been a while. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Can we just talk? Figure out where we're growing. Yeah. Started off right. I can see it in your eyes. I can tell.
I feel like the weekend needs to start early this week. I don't know.
I agree.
It's been every weather front. I am so tired of waking up in winter, having breakfast in spring, lunch in the summertime.
We literally had like all seasons and within like 2 days. I mean, come
can't
on.
Anymore.
But can we just acknowledge the fact that we had 75 degrees
yesterday?
Was it yesterday? It was yesterday.
And it was sleeting on my face coming back from Ebertfest on Sunday. It's just giant waves of sleet. I couldn't believe it.
You know what I haven't mentioned was I had to be on the Kennedy on Sunday, and I saw this truck hauling a trailer, not a big semi, just a little like pickup truck, and it had a mid-sized sort of trailer on it. And I try to steer clear. In bad weather, I steer clear of anybody dragging something, because the wind could take it, the ice could take it. And I've seen someone roll over into a ditch. I was in Alabama one time, and the wind took a trailer off. So I hung back a little bit. And I was driving, and he was in front of me off to the left, and I just was trying to give him some distance. Mm-hmm. But at some point, it was like someone had taken a bucket of ice and just shoved it. Like, one of the tire covers had trapped snow or something, and it shot up into my windshield. I mean, I thought I wouldn't have been surprised if it had destroyed my windshield.
Oh, wow.
It was so startling, and I felt very confident.
That sounds dangerous, actually.
I didn't flinch at all.
Patty.
I think my head went like this, because it felt like it was coming at my face, but I didn't swerve it or anything. I felt like a professional driver, or someone who just, you know, knows what they're doing once in a while.
This is why I feel safe when you drive me home, Patty. That is why.
My dad was a cab driver.
That's right.
He was a cab driver, which actually leads us to our listener who's joining us.
Yeah,
we are hanging out with Matt Fagerholm in studio. He is the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com.
You got it.
And he is also IndieOutlook.com.
And I love Taxi Driver, the movie. So
and Taxi Driver Bob is on the line.
We love Taxi.
Nice segue.
Exactly. Hey, Taxi Driver Bob, how are you doing?
Hey, is this Patty Vasquez, the finest WGN radio host there is?
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm working days now, so I don't get to listen to you. I miss you so much.
Oh, what was a great
show. Too bad you don't work days or something.
It works out well.
You were talking about the windshield cracking. I had my windshield was cracked, but not from the snow on Sunday. So I was in this place in Chicago because they do windshields for like $185, and I was getting quotes for like $550, $750.
Right, right.
All these crazy prices.
Can you tell us the name of the $185? What's the name of the place?
It's Pilsen Auto Glass. They're at 2120 South Ashland.
Good to know. All right.
And they do good work over there. They also have a place in Waukegan, but they were all booked and stuff. But anyway, so I had a guy that was in there. I'm talking about something that you brought that the whole thing up with the windshield. The guy was driving down I-55 at Ashland, and there was a big snowplow truck above on Ashland plowing the snow on Ashland, and he was driving underneath the bridge, and the snowplow covered his, it cracked his whole front windshield with that heavy snow.
Yeah.
And he was, I was like, whoa, man. I'm glad I wasn't driving over there.
That's
but anyway,
awful.
So I wanted to bring up, I saw today, I got an email from Netflix about this series called, with Uma Thurman called Chambers. And I saw the preview of it, and it's coming out, like, I guess on the 26th of April on Friday. And it looks really, really, really good. You have to check it out. I think it's going to be really one of those interesting series that they have. And I guess it's a Netflix production. I don't know if you're a guest over there.
Oh, yeah. Consumed by the mystery surrounding the donor heart that saved her life, a young patient starts taking on sinister characteristics of the deceased.
Well, all I can say is, since I haven't seen it myself, I'm there if it's Uma Thurman. I am a fan of hers, and she has a certain presence where you just can't take your eyes off her, and Kill Bill is one of my favorite movies, so there you go. I guess I'm sold.
And Tony Goldwyn, who, of course, from the series Scandal, played the president of the United States. So
absolutely.
All right.
No, it looks interesting. I appreciate the recommendation. There's just so much right now, especially when you're covering films as much as I am. Like, how do you have enough time? Like, you literally need to clone yourself to see all the TV shows, all the films, you know, and give them equal weight, give them equal attention. It's a task.
For your job, there's not enough time in the day to be able to cover all the stuff that's coming out with all the different avenues of bringing out different stuff. So.
Absolutely. And now there's more films being released now more than ever because of all these different platforms. Now Disney's going to have its own Disney Plus platform and stuff.
I can't get another streaming service.
I know. And now I can't even see Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone because it's on CBS All Access, which is like the biggest oxymoron ever. It's there's no access. I'm just kind of slipping into the Twilight Zone trying to get to it, you know. I don't know.
I can't even watch movies anymore. I don't know. You get so into these series shows where there's so much character development and story plot that I find it very difficult to watch a movie that's 2 hours long where they, you know, actually do justice to the story.
Oh, I don't know. I can go either way. Although I don't get a chance to go out to the movies as much anymore, which is why I love having Matt here so that he can tell me what I need to see.
Well, because TV shows now are a commitment. You have to watch the whole thing.
Right.
It's a serial. Like, if you watched I Love Lucy back in the day, it didn't matter if you missed the past episode. It's like, you know who it is. You'll get the idea. A half hour, it's done.
Yeah, I don't have that much time or money to give all the streaming services at this point.
No,
well, thanks for the recommendation, Taxi Driver Bob.
Yeah,
be safe out
check
there.
Check that out.
Great night. I wish I could hear you more, but it's very enjoyable that I worked a late night tonight. Thursdays are always busy at the airport, so
yeah,
I had a regular customer come in. It was a very amusing ride. He had drank 4 glasses of wine on the plane, so extremely intoxicated and funny.
Yeah,
but anyways, that
keeps it colorful. Well, be well. Be safe.
Drive safe. Yeah.
Talk to you later. Thank you so much. I agree. And unfortunately, the opportunities that my husband and I have to get out to go to the movies are far and few between.
Yes.
So when we do go, it's to take our son Griffin to go see movies. Like, we saw Shazam yesterday.
Oh, what'd you think of Shazam?
I enjoyed it.
From a parental perspective.
Oh, I enjoyed it a lot. Although, you know what's funny? I always flinch a little bit. They don't need the S-bomb.
Yeah.
Right? It was, I guess, to make the kids edgy. Okay, let me ask you something. Do you feel like the younger, the older and younger, I can't remember the name of the character of Shazam.
Yeah, the main guy. So it's a kid who turns into like the older version of himself. So it is the Tom Hanks film Big, let's just say. And they do an homage garb.
Yeah.
A big homage.
Yeah, yes. A little bit much with the keyboard on the floor in the toy store.
I mean, they should have just dedicated it to Penny Marshall, right? I mean, they should have just said, you know, this is our homage to you, you know, the late, great Penny Marshall.
And I thought that the storyteller, I mean, what a fun in, right? Where he's in the backseat of the car and his dad's verbally abusive. His brother's a jerk.
The dad, who never ages, by the way.
And
I'm sorry. That man
guy.
Does not age. It cuts like 30 years later. It like goes from the 70s to present day and like not a single gray hair on his head.
Same bad guy every single time. So he's in the way they do that, the way it unfolds, I thought was really well done.
Yeah.
He gets transported to the wizard and you sort of have this plot line unfold.
Mm-hmm. But did you buy them both as the same person?
That's what I was going to ask you.
That's the thing.
No.
I didn't.
No,
I didn't see enough similarity between it because I felt like when he was the big guy, and that's when I got really into it because the actor playing him is so much fun. And it's like George of the Jungle era Brendan Fraser, just like this big goofball. But it was just, he was so goofy. He wasn't like the kid was coming off more adult than he was when
exactly.
he was
Exactly. He was more street
adult.
Smart.
Yeah, it was weird.
Here's a kid who can trick the cops into locking themselves into a pawn
exactly,
shop, right?
Exactly.
But all of a sudden, like, he
did. Here's this guy going, what's this gun? What will this do? It's like, what? Did you just, like, lose your memory as well?
Right. And
it's
and
just bizarre.
My husband tried to write it off as, like, well, he's just surprised. And
yeah,
I'm like, yeah, at some point.
It's too much to me. I don't know. But it was fun. It was just kind of a big, silly, fun movie. Just like how Aquaman was Splash. So it's like, that's what DC is doing. It's just taking these old Tom Hanks movies and just restructuring them. And so then you have the Birds of Prey movie coming out with the big baseball bat wielding, you know, ladies. Like, is that going to be League of Their Own? Like, is that just, it's just going to be one Hanks film after another, I guess. I don't know, who knows?
And you're right, though. The moment that Nicole Kidman eats the goldfish out of the town,
Daryl Hannah.
Splash.
Yeah, right, right out there.
I'm like,
yeah.
Why don't you just could cast Daryl Hannah? She looks great. She's
yeah,
my grandmother.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
That would have been funny, too.
I would have loved that.
So, we have to take a break. We have more conversation when we come back. Okay. We're hanging out with Matt Fagerholm from RogerEbert.com and IndieOutlook.com. And we always love talking movies with him. We'll be right back. 720 WGN. Thank you for your text and calls, 312-981-7200. Maybe we'll talk Twilight Zone. I don't know if anyone's seen it.
We'll talk that. All right. A little Star Wars, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the trailer. Yeah. I've heard something about that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, Vivian, we have talked in the past about my appalling lack of musical knowledge. Okay,
this is the theme song of blank.
Hold on
Say
a second.
It.
No, I know it's of Star Wars.
Okay,
but
awesome.
Our friend
this
Brian
guy has
Page,
a show on the station.
You can come on the microphone, Brian.
I know you know that song.
I do, but this is why. Will you do me a favor? And can you pull up the theme song from the Superman movie by the same composer?
Okay.
And the very first couple moments of it, because I... This is how,
there are certain stylistic similarities. But, I will say, I bow to John Williams, absolute genius. But it's true. I think it's okay to have a voice. It's okay to have a particular style approach that is recognizable.
Griffin would not. He was like my son. To have my son yelling at me, and it's one thing when he's yelling at me about CCR, right?
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
like,
yes.
"Come on, Mom." But when Superman started, like I was talking to them on television, when one show ends and another thing starts. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you still see the credits of the last thing, but they'll start the next movie in the corner or whatever,
yes.
right? So the music had started, but the last like credits were still rolling for the last thing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the screen, he's like, you know what this is from, right? And I'm looking at the screen and I'm not putting anything together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, Star Wars. And he goes, and he starts yelling at me. It's a lot of stress to be musically illiterate, I have to tell you. Sometimes it's just, yeah. So I said, oh, this is Star Wars.
But it makes your life more surprising in that way. It's, you know, it can be a little less bored.
Things
are a little less familiar.
It is. And the thing is, I'll know the answer to something, but if I have to answer right away on the spot, like there was a song playing mm-hmm. and Steve goes, you know who this is? And I'm like, Cat Stevens. And now that we have a smart speaker, and it wasn't Brown Eyed Girl, it was Van Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
But my husband, like, he goes, hey, Google, play Van Morrison, right? I'm sorry, everybody, by the way, who has Google. By the way, my phone's probably doing that right. Yeah, here you go.
Oh, there it is.
Anyway, so yes, I
got the intro.
Yeah, here's the beginning of it, right?
Let's play it.
I could sing the intro right now.
See, it's that part that
sure.
like,
yeah, I see. Yeah. I see what you're doing.
But then it goes, but then there's like
the big rise.
That horn.
There it goes. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, I can see how I should have known the difference. You wouldn't have known? No.
This is the music that should play every time I get out of bed in the morning. This is the best music to get up to. This would be amazing.
Like, you know it's going to be a good day.
It's right.
Risen.
It just propels you right out like a springboard.
I don't know how I didn't know it, but I...
Yeah. Well, I mean, he wrote that pretty much back to back. Like, you know, Star Wars 77, Superman 78. I mean, what an amazing decade for that guy. I mean,
I agree.
Insane.
And we were talking about him because, is he retiring now after this last Star Wars?
Well, I think this will be his last Star Wars. I don't think it's necessarily he's retiring completely as a composer. I hope not. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, what a legacy. I mean, what an unbelievable legacy. I've seen him three times at the Chicago Symphony, and it's close to a religious experience as anything I've had. It's incredible.
To be able to tell, like, whose music is what? Like a Stormtrooper or Darth Vader's music or, you know,
those
Luke.
Movies, you can't even think of those movies without the music attached to it. And you see the movies. All you need is the music, and you just see everything. It's
just
visual music.
Which, of course, helped during the trailer. Some people were weepy.
Yes. Well, here was the genius thing in the trailer. They used the theme that he wrote for Princess Leia, and it was a long, like, tense rise through this obvious North by Northwest homage when she's running through the desert. Ray's running through the desert with this, you know, big ship going after her, just like the crop duster chasing Cary Grant.
A TIE fighter.
And she does this amazing flip over it, and it was, and then it just surges into the Princess Leia theme. And we know that Carrie Fisher's gone, but they found all this footage of her that they're using, that they're somehow able to incorporate so she can be in this film.
Right.
But the big thing everyone's excited about and everyone was expecting was finally Billy Dee Williams is in this. Finally Lando Calrissian.
No doubt.
Wouldn't it be amazing if he sticks the landing, if he finally comes back? And there's all this stuff in the previous films where Han is like, the only way you're getting the Falcon is over my dead body. Well, now he's
dead.
All worked out. It was very tidy.
I feel like I was one of the few people that really enjoyed Solo. And
I mean, I loved Lando in that
film.
I want it to be a Lando movie, quite frankly.
And his very odd relationship with his droid.
Kinky relationship with the droid, absolutely. I enjoyed it.
It was great.
Yeah, it was at least something different, and Donald Glover was just bringing the charisma. He was entertaining. And you can really see a through line between Donald Glover and Billy Dee Williams. I can believe they're the same person.
Oh, yeah.
I can totally believe they're the same person.
When you see his closet, and he's got all the wardrobe and everything, so wonderful. So, what do you think, you personally... I know there's a lot of mixed emotions.
There's a lot of people who hate Last Jedi. I love Last Jedi, personally. Uh-huh. I love that it takes all of these risks. And people are like, well, wait a second. How can this happen? And it's like, well, didn't you see Empire Strikes Back where there was all this bleakness and all of this, you know, all this, you know, potential of a dead end? Well, then that's what leads to the third chapter where things start to get resolved and there's, you know, the hope comes back. It's like people are forgetting what the structure of a trilogy is. Like, you're supposed to be losing the hope in the second part. And I loved the audacity of it. So.
And sometimes there's cute little teddy bears that were supposed to be
those little porg things. Yeah. I mean, I loved how the director just threw them in there without any purpose whatsoever. It's like, this is literally just to sell toys. They're not even going to have any function in this movie whatsoever.
No doubt about it. So people are not enjoying the title of it. A lot of people are like, The Rise of Skywalker. It's the only one in the series that has a character, right? The rest of it has been like sort of a broader theme.
I mean, still the worst title is Attack of the Clones, because the clones never attacked in Attack of the Clones. Like, it was the biggest bait and switch ever. And that seemed kind of weirdly specific too, like with the clones. But it doesn't matter to me, because I feel like Rise of Skywalker is going to have many different meanings that people are going to be mulling over until we finally see what it means. And a lot of people are like, well, now this finally means that Rey is a Skywalker. I don't think necessarily. I think there's going to be more to it than that. You know, there might be like this whole legion now known as the Skywalkers that are now like the new Jedis or something. Who knows? I mean, I think there's many different possibilities for what it could be. I don't think it could possibly be that
simple.
Because I like the philosophy that she doesn't have to come from a grand bloodline to be a hero. That was the great message of Last Jedi, was that anyone can rise above whatever their history is or their past is and become that hero that we need. It was pretty much the exact same message in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
So will you be disappointed if it was that simple?
I would be disappointed if it's like, okay, well, so it's just grand bloodline, whatever, that's it.
All right, then.
I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But then everyone's like, why is the Emperor in this? There's a big laugh at the end of the trailer. That's Ian McDiarmid, who is so much fun as Emperor Palpatine. I'd love to see him back. But how is he back? How can all these people that fall down this giant shaft into a void come back? Because Darth Maul comes back in Solo, and he was literally sliced in half.
Which means that perhaps...
if Darth Maul can come back and Emperor Palpatine can come back, Han Solo can come back, people. All right?
Well, so
that was literally just a flesh wound. Force Awakens, that's it.
That's
he
right.
fell into a vat of carbonite, he's fine. Like, I don't see...
I like that. And then maybe Luke Skywalker comes back.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's back. Right. the trailer ends with Luke saying no one is gone forever or something, or no one's ever really gone, so...
Right. There you go.
They'll all just come back in big kick line at the end. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see what happens.
We are hanging out with Matt Fagerholm. He is the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com the editor of Indie Outlook?
Indie Outlook, sure. Editor, publisher.
Publisher of Indie
Jedi,
Outlook.
Whatever you want to say. It's all good.
Master.
Exactly.
Jedi master of IndieOutlook.com.
Yes.
More conversation when we come back. Hey, I have good news for you. I know you're very excited to talk about the fair tax of Illinois after 11:30.
Oh, I can't wait.
I know. It's a fair tax.
I'm just going to be getting my caffeine going. It'll be great.
I've got charts and diagrams for you.
Sweet, let's do it.
I don't know if he brought the storyboards for us, but we'll see.
I'll just do it in the voice of Jennifer Tilly. It'll be a great time.
That's what we're talking about when we come back.
Yes.
More with Matt when we come back. 720 WGN 312-981-7200 to join our conversation anytime. That's the number to call or text, 312-981-7200. We are
are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and joining us right now is Matt Fagerholm. He is the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com. We're also joined by the senior vice president of Shepherd's College, because I made him hang out a little bit longer. He's like, can I sit back here? I'm like, you can jump on a microphone and talk about these great things. We're talking movies, and we also are joined by Representative Robert Martwick from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District.
Rootin' Tootin'.
The Rootin' Tootin'. And we're talking about a festival that happens on the campus of my alma mater.
Alma mater, too. Oh, really? And Roger Ebert's alma mater. That's why it's there.
Exactly.
That's right.
When did he study film at the University of Illinois?
Oh, gosh. Oh, no. No, it's... I
want to say the 60s,
remember.
Maybe?
Yes. Kind of around that time. And it was when he was really finding his voice. And if you go in the archives of, you know, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, I mean, you can see him becoming Roger Ebert right there. I mean, you can see these incredible editorials where he's talking not just about what happened in the immediate, but about the culture and how it affects people. And just, I mean, even if it wasn't talking about movies, you could tell he was talking on a level that wasn't just about the specific. It was about taking it out and saying, well, what does this say about the culture? What does it say about us as a people? Fantastic stuff.
I'll take a look for that.
This festival, it was in its 21st year. We're going to have the 22nd year next year. It's just so lovely. It's so great to get people that it's people locally in the community. It's people traveling in from all these different places, all celebrating cinema and being open to new experiences, being open to films that challenge them and films that they don't know exactly what they're going to be in store for. A lot of people had not seen Lana and Lily Wachowski's best film, I think, still to date, this film Bound that we showed.
That was the Wachowski's brother.
It was the Wachowski's film before Matrix.
Yeah,
but I think it is just one of the most tightly paced, just perfect, like crime thriller romance
seduction. Yes,
yeah, dark comedies. It is so enjoyable, and we had both of the lead actresses, Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly, there. And Jennifer, I'm a big Jennifer Tilly fan because she just has one of those singular voices. You hear it in a movie.
Oh, you know, it's
and
her.
You know it's her.
Right.
And well, there's a film that I watched that just, it still makes me hyperventilate with laughter. I mean, comedy is a subjective thing, but Liar Liar, the film with Jim Carrey,
because
really? There was a lot of films early on with him where I'm like, well, he's just doing this crazy face to make a crazy face and whatever. But in this movie, he's playing a guy whose body is literally fighting against his mind. Like, he literally cannot tell a lie, and that's what his job depends on as a lawyer. And it's just, and it gives great motivation for him, like, screwing up his face and just writhing around. It's just, it's amazing to see. And Jennifer Tilly in this movie, she has to be like the straight woman. So she'll just be like, listen, you liar, get over it, and like, that's what her voice is. And I was like, is this really what her voice is going to be in person? Yes, it is.
It's kind of like,
it's amazing.
She's like our modern day Judy Holliday.
It's exactly like Judy Holliday. Absolutely. Yeah. And I asked her, so what was, I mean, were you, you know, what was it like working with Jim Carrey? It's like, oh, you know, he never does the same thing twice. It shocks you every time. And I was like, I just love you. Can I just have you and Gilbert Gottfried be in a podcast together?
Oh, how because, great.
But it's just two amazing voices all at once.
Wow.
Amazing,
yeah. And Gina Gershon was there as well.
Gina Gershon was like the straight woman to Jennifer Tilly.
Sure.
If you can actually go on the Ebert Fest YouTube page and watch the whole Q&A between them, and it is just drop dead hilarious.
So it's RogerEbert.com. You can find it all the...
In the Ebert Fest YouTube page. But yes, on RogerEbert.com, we have all of the videos embedded in our coverage. So yeah, check it out. It's fantastic.
And so where the movie's being shown
All at the Virginia Theater, all in this gigantic, gorgeous venue. The opening night film was Amazing Grace, this new film that it was from 1972, but it's finally been restored. The sound has been restored. And it's Aretha Franklin performing in this like gospel church. It's like one of the greatest concert films I've ever seen, and her going into this church, and it was a lot of people from her, you know, past. It was like she grew up in a church like this, and a lot of people are like, well, she's kind of gone away from religion, she's not who she used to be, and she kind of came back and was like, no, I'm still very much into my faith, and I'm very much into this type of music, and the gospel music in this film is so electrifying. People were like cheering watching it, like people were applauding on the screen and in the theater.
Oh, really?
And then we had the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Choir of Champaign performing on stage afterwards, and it was thrilling. I've never really seen gospel music of that of that level of grandeur, that many people,
right?
And just the harmonizing, everyone has like a different tone. It's like da 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 da. I mean, it's just like, oh,
Mac, it's amazing. Very excited
like,
about
it's
this.
It's like a balancing act. It's amazing. Yes.
How were the crowds at the festival?
It was fantastic. Yeah. You know, every year it's going to be different. But when you have big names like Gina Gershon, Jennifer Tilly, definitely brings in the people. And we had a great celebration for Richard Roper. We showed Almost Famous and Sideways, two of his favorite movies he reviewed with Roger. And so yeah. That was fantastic.
That's right.
Yes.
Man.
And Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. We showed with David Merkin, who's the legendary Simpsons producer. He's the one who directed it. So he had many stories about working with Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino. And, you know, there were people saying we want to lighten up a bit with some comedy. So
sure. It makes sense.
It makes sense because there are some heavy movies at Ebert Fest. Yeah.
You know, I was mentioning that I haven't had a chance to go to the movies very often, but a film festival is such a great way to sort of take yourself out of the moment and devote yourself to just all things, you know, cinematic.
Yes, and my favorite film, actually watching it again, is Rachel Getting Married. That was my favorite film we showed here. I don't know if you ever saw that, but Jonathan Demme directed it. It was Anne Hathaway's first Oscar nomination, and it's a brilliant film about this young woman who's battling addiction. She goes back to her sister's wedding, and she's getting mired in all this familial stuff, and then she is able to kind of let go, and just you allow yourself to be in the flow of the wedding, and it's just like this tribute to how America's becoming more diverse and more, like, we're all just one human family. That's right. Essentially what the message is. So definitely check that film out.
So that was
Rachel Getting Married. That was my favorite one this year, for sure.
At the film festival.
At the film festival.
I wonder, because the nice thing is we can go online and see what the lineup was and kind of live vicariously that way. Because Representative Martwick and I don't get a chance. You don't get a chance to go to the movies either, do you?
You know, not lately. I haven't had a whole lot. It has really become a treat. So I used to be a crazy movie buff when I was a kid. It was the kind of thing where I was probably going to movies four nights a week, you know, and we used to do that all the time. And it was either I'd go to a movie with my mom, I'd go to a movie with my sister, go to a movie with my girlfriend, go to a movie with my best friend. So four nights a week we were at the movies. And I mean, we were huge movie buffs, but, you know, life changes. And it's something I miss. And I'm just watching the excitement here. That's I'm looking forward to doing some moving. I'm going to do a little my own thing. I set up my own little home theater in my basement, you know, surround sound and all that. And so I pulled out all my Blu-ray DVDs, and I'm looking forward to kind of doing a little movie fest.
Certain movies you gravitated towards, or certain favorites of yours?
Yeah, you know, I mean, of course, I've got, I think everyone has their own favorites, but obviously certain movies that I've always wanted to, that I had some sort of connection or identification with or whatever. I just loved them. And so I would purchase them and put them in my collection so I had them. And, you know, I'm looking forward to going back. And, I mean, some of them are probably the obvious ones, Star Wars or Apocalypse Now, some of my favorites. But then, like, I think my favorite obscure film is a film, and I know you're going to know this. I wonder if you'll know this one, Patty. Wrestling Ernest Hemingway.
That's
it was Robert Duvall and he was a British actor, Harris.
Not Richard Harris. No,
Richard Harris. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. I haven't seen it. I can't help you out because I haven't seen it.
Shirley MacLaine. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a tremendous movie. It's sort of a,
and Sandra Bullock.
Yes. And it's just like one of these things.
Nurse?
Where
is that the one where she?
No, she's a waitress.
Okay.
She's a waitress, and it's two Robert Duvall and Richard Harris play two very senior citizen, older than they were actually in life at that point. Retired, one's a retired barber and the other's a retired seaman.
Yes.
And they meet up and they strike up this friendship, and it's really a fascinating story of life sort of movie. And it's really, I don't know, I love it.
That was a fantastic recommendation. That's one that I forgot about, but Robert Duvall is just such a giant. You could do a whole marathon of his films.
One of my favorite things, we used to have a segment here called Semper Film. Semper Film, where we would watch movies with Marines, military movies.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And one of their favorites was The Great Santini, which so surprising to me how much they enjoyed that movie, because it dealt with, you know, PTSD and some of the you know, coming home and having family members who don't know what you're going through.
Yeah.
And even some of the domestic violence and the racial issues. They loved that movie.
Yeah, well, something that's truthful. You want to see that represented.
And here are kids who are like 18 to 25 years old, and they loved this movie from the 70s. And it was great. Many of them hadn't seen Stripes, so.
Oh, yeah.
Do you like that one?
Well, yeah. The only
moment that movie they said resonated or felt true was when they were cleaning up, picking up garbage on the field. That's the only thing. One of our listeners said, I love Tilly from the 217. I love Tilly in Let It Ride, which is also.
Yeah, that's right. Richard Dreyfuss. That's one of Richard Dreyfuss's favorite movies, he told me.
Really? Oh, that's right. You interviewed him.
Yes, yeah.
That's so cool. Let's take a break here. And what you've been waiting for, we're going to talk about Fair Tax.
Yes. Let's do this.
Did you bring the storyboards?
I've got the whole PowerPoint presentation. We're going to go right through the windows, and we're going to put it on the old building over there.
Wouldn't that be great if we could? Here's what it's going to take, folks.
And he's doing this as Jennifer Tilly, folks. He's doing this. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic.
More when we come back on 720 WGN.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter at Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Kind of enjoyed something that Matt Fagerholm said during the break. Matt is the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com and the publisher of IndieOutlook.com. He said that you never know what's going to happen on my show.
So. I love it. That is the motto, is expect the unexpected on the Patty Vasquez Show, which I love. You never know. You'll be talking about films or roadkill or taxes. It's amazing. It's a big grab bag.
One of my favorite lines from the movie Field of Dreams is, look out for In Your Ear.
That's another great film.
Don't remember that.
30th anniversary.
Okay, we've had an argument on the show with Dave Lundy, who comes. I'll have to have you on the air with him.
Sure.
He hates that movie.
Well, it's total cornball. You got to embrace the cornball or just reject it entirely. I embrace it.
Exactly. You have to lean into the corny.
Come on, James Earl Jones monologue about baseball. Come on. Come on. Okay, fall for that.
Well, here comes In Your Ear. When I started, there are people who are like, you know, you should stick to comedy. And, you know, why do you get to, what people forget is that when I started doing this show, the very first guest I ever had on my show was Senator Dan Katowski. Mm. One of the first segments we ever introduced on my show was called It Ought to Be a Law. And we actually helped pass a couple pieces of legislation in regards to having that fee for people who are drawing alimony when they go to the cash station, the ATMs, on top of already, like, struggling. Folks are being charge fees and interest, and that came out of It Ought to Be a Law. So the goal of this show is always to talk about what's going on in the state of Illinois, and I always contend that the best way to know more is to talk more, and that's whether on the show or going in and meeting your legislators, meeting your aldermen. Yeah, you know, when I was in Springfield, Representative Martwick, when there was a big protest, some folks had walked from Chicago to Springfield to protest, which is a long walk. I don't know if you've driven it, but it takes a while. So it was a couple days that they had walked, and I was talking to this young man, and he was very passionate and very upset about the budget. And I said, well, what did your legislator say when you stopped at his office? Right? Because the budget impasse went on for over 2 years. And he goes, oh, I didn't stop at his office. And I said, well, what's your legislator's name? And he goes, oh, I don't know. And I thought, well, before you walked here, you're probably going to stop at his office first till he, you know, get some more information.
Or pull out your cell phone and call. You know, figure out who it is before you get there, right?
Yeah. So for the and that was the other thing too. And a lot of folks, and I get it. And sometimes when people call and they're upset and fired up about something, I'll ask who is your legislator. And sometimes I'm not trying to shame anybody. Like, I know Patty, I'm supposed to know by now, but it's not that. It's just that it's for you. I'm not upset at you. I'm disappointed for you because I know how frustrating it is to not know more. So go to openstates.org. Mm. And there are other websites like that where you can find out Ballotpedia. You can find out, you know, you can type in your address or more information about your community. It will tell you about your state, your federal, your local, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So
I had the privilege of sitting in on a Mikveh Challenge Power Lunch. So Mikveh Challenge was founded by former Congressman Abner Mikveh. It was designed to get young people engaged in the process, civically minded. And so they had a big power lunch, and there were all of these officials that joined, and it was great. But one of the things I went around this little power lunch table that I was eating at, and I said, where are you from and who's your you know, they all wanted to ask me questions, so I turned the tables and I said, where are you from and tell me where you go to high school, tell me where you live, and tell me who your state representative is. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of kids who, you know, they were there for this mikvah power lunch, like, we're engaged, and they're like, I don't know. And I said, look, I said, and this is what I tell young people all the time, there are loads of people whose entire model of what they're trying to get out of this world, what they're trying to get out of the political process, is predicated on you not knowing who your state representative
Ooh.
Is.
That's
a great right? point. There are a lot of people who benefit from you, just don't pay attention. We'd prefer if you didn't.
Right.
Low voter turnout, that benefits us just fine. Mm-hmm. We would rather you be. And there's two parts to that, right? The one thing is that there are people who prefer that that happen. We all know democracy works better when you participate. And so we should all encourage people to participate. But what I try to tell these young people is that while people are not participating, your voice is that much more important, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So when people are not participating, your voice is amplified because of the fact that it's a larger percentage of the whole. So, you know, why would you not know? Why would you not get involved if you care, get involved, and then encourage other people to get involved?
And it's never been easier.
No,
it's never been easier. With your phone, it's never been easier. Mm-hmm. I mean, I cheated when I was little. I still remember who my state senator is and who my state representative was. And that would be, one, because McAuliffe's dad was my state representative, mm-hmm. and Dudzik, D-U-D. And the reason I knew that was because his office was on my block. I lived on Northwest Highway, and so his state office was down there. And then it got turned into a dental office, but that's not part of the story. But, I mean, for me, I lived kind of in the middle of a community where the Chamber of Commerce was down the street, mm-hmm. and my dad was a precinct captain. He was a Republican precinct captain. So I knew, you know, I was always going door-to-door with him and you know, walking the neighborhood and getting to know people. So I guess that's part of why I've always wanted to help other people know more, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't drag people kicking and screaming if it's not something they want to talk about. Right. But we also try to make it engaging, right? Yep. And also I love getting to share the stories of our legislators, and I think we're going to turn back to doing more of that in the next few weeks because the end of session's coming up in less than 5 weeks, 6 weeks.
21 days of session left.
So there's a lot going on in Springfield, and since I won't be able to get down there, I don't think they're going to let me go. But I know. But there is a lot going on. We're talking about, they're talking about gambling. They're mm-hmm. talking about expanding gambling, legalizing recreational marijuana. And one of the big things is the fair tax, mm-hmm. which you had a town hall meeting today and folks showed up at the Union Ridge School. And like, this is why it's important to know who your legislators are. Go to their Facebook page. Go to their website. Find out what they're doing in the neighborhoods. So if you have questions about stuff that's happening in Springfield, it's not happening in a vacuum. They're there to talk about it.
Yeah, and this is, you know, you talk about the Fair Tax Initiative, which is something that, as you know, I've been working on for a few years. Now that Governor Pritzker has put his might behind it, I think there's a good chance that we could make this happen. But it is not a foregone conclusion. And again, do you think it's a good idea or do you not think it's a good idea? The point is that the legislature is going to decide whether or not, right? So we have to take a vote on whether or not this gets placed on the ballot to become a referendum question. And only then, if it gets on the referendum in 2020, will you have an opportunity to go in and weigh. And it's your vote that decides whether or not we have a fair tax, a tax with graduated income rates, or we stick with our same flat tax that we've had. Whether you like it or you don't like it, it's your decision. I don't get to make it happen. I only get to decide whether or not you get to make it happen. And that's why people need to know who their legislator is so they can call them and say, hey, don't you dare vote to put this on the ballot. Or, hey, you better vote to put this on the ballot. That's the one, of course, I prefer since I'm carrying the legislation. But, you know, whichever your preference is, weigh in. This is huge stuff in Illinois. This has huge, far-reaching consequences for generations. Weigh in. Mm-hmm.
I'm grabbing my notebook because I took a lot of notes while you were talking. Someone came up to me and asked me if I was a journalist, and I was like, I play one on the radio. I'm a talk show host, and that's something that, you know, I occupy sort of this strange territory where I share my opinions, but I also want to make sure that others have the opportunity and the space to talk about things that they want to know more about, or if they disagree. You know, that's why the phone lines are always open. The text screen is always open, 312-981-7200. Of course, if you're abusive, either on the phone to Vivian, you don't make it on the air. And if you're
abusive, be nice, everybody, be nice.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Here's my thing, my rule about the text screen. If you wouldn't say it to me, if you wouldn't call me and say it on the air, then certainly, you know, don't waste your energy and put it on the screen, because, you know.
Makes those thumbs feel good.
It's just, yeah.
Twitter sets a bad precedent. A precedent, sorry. That had to be said.
Oh, look at that. Let's go to the commercial. More to this on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about opening the Constitution. Are we opening it? Is there like a creaking
amending
noise?
Amending it.
Yes.
We're not opening it because that would open everything.
Okay, so amending. That's a question that people have. Let's talk about that when we come back on 720 WGN. Give me a call, 312-981-7200. And if you would say it to me, then you can text it to me, 312-981-7200. You like that, don't you?
I like that one.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I remember when I lost my mind.
CeeLo. I'm going to say CeeLo. Am I guessing right?
Oh, my God. Yes. I'm so proud of you.
This is how I am at restaurants when I'm by myself. Thank you. And I just start screaming things out. I actually will write down notes to myself. I'm like, I knew a song at a restaurant. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and it's always time for Patty's appalling lack of musical knowledge. But we are talking about what's going on in the state of Illinois, what you need to know. And we also want to know what your thoughts are. Joining me is State Representative Robert Martwick, representing the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District over by there, including parts of Portage Park, Harwood Heights, Norridge, Jefferson Park, Gladstone Park. I always miss one or two.
Dunning.
Mm-hmm. I gotta go visit Dunning. I don't know where Dunning is. Sorry, Dunning. We'll be right over there.
It's the hip.
Oh,
the hip is Dunning.
That's Dunning?
Well, it's in Norridge, but that area of Chicago that surrounds it is Dunning.
Interesting. I did not realize
that.
And also hanging out with us, the Senior Vice President of Shepherd's College, Brian Page, hanging out with us. Thank you so much.
Glad to
be
here.
Matt Fagerholm from RogerEbert.com and publisher of Indie Outlook. And we were about to start talking about the fair tax and what it means for you, but out of the gate, Joe wants to join us. Hey, Joe. Oh, no echo. How are you doing?
I made a concession. I called you on my cell phone.
Excellent. Yeah, for some reason, landlines give us an echo. Hmm. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Two points, major points, if you will. Number one, it's called, let's do this on tax, that, the other thing, scenario. Okay? Judy Bard-Kapinka, I think, I remember her from, I don't know, 3-5 years back before she passed away. I thought was one of the most credible governmental employees. She said, let's look at consolidation of governmental redundancy, mm-hmm. Okay? So you don't look at tax as a first resort. Look at streamlining, making government more efficient, if you will. The second point I'd like to make very efficiently is for pensions. Pensions are an absurdity. I receive a pension from General Electric, but they're a dying breed. Back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, I would think, I hazard a guess, 60% of people working for a living got a pension. They're obsolete now. They're dinosaurs. The government should recognize this, change the Constitution, and convert pensions to IRAs, like the rest, the majority of population lives with.
Okay.
I've got a frog in my throat, so I hope I'm audible here.
We got everything that you said. I do know one of the things that you were talking about, streamlining government. I didn't know until today that Illinois has the fewest number of state employees in the country.
Yeah,
per capita.
Yeah, so the state government obviously is run through a series of state agencies. We have the lowest number of state employees per capita in the country. What Joe talks about is the fact that we have, because of the structure of our state, because we're a rural state, we started out with, you know, you have townships and counties, and so we have a whole bunch of different series of governments, and he's talking about consolidating some of these smaller forms of government into bigger forms of government, and there's been a big push for that in Springfield and allowing it. Where Illinois has the most levels of government is school districts, and again, the problem is that we have a lot of single-unit school districts because you have these schools that are sort of out in the middle of farmland in southern Illinois. So it's kind of hard. I mean, up here in, you know, when you for instance, we were up at Union Ridge, a wonderful school, but it is a single school district. There could be a case for consolidation where, you know, perhaps the Norridge and the Harwood Heights schools could be put together into one, and there's been a case made for that. But it's never quite as easy as it seems, because again, when you get into these rural districts down south, these schools could be a long way away from each other, and to consolidate them into one district, it is a little bit more complicated than it seems. But that is something we're pursuing.
And as far as the pensions go, Joe, are you talking about going forward how we structure pensions for future employees, or do you think we should retroactively squelch on our promises to the contracts we made with people who've done the work?
I don't believe in welching. So current employees, just like Social Security, you keep what you have right now. But any new programs, they should do an amendment saying, get with the rest of the world, if you will, on the United States, I should say, on an IRA scenario. Forget the pensions, which automatically have a 3% scenario every year, COLA or whatever you want to call it. And the 1.8 is what the normal has been over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, so the we actually changed that in 2010. So every employee hired after January 1st, 2011 is on a vastly – well, they're still on a pension, there's no doubt. But it is a far more austere benefit. So where Tier 1, which was the old system, they were able to retire at age 55 with 30 years of service. They were entitled to a 3% compounding COLA, and their annuity was based off of the average of their highest 4 years of earnings. The Tier 2 employees have to work to 67, not 55. Their COLA is calculated on a simple basis, and it's 3% or half the rate of inflation, whichever is lower. So lately, Tier 1 employees are getting COLAs of around a 0.5%, 1% on a simple, not compounding basis. And finally, their annuity is based off of the average of their highest 8 years of service, not 4 years. So it's substantially lower. Most retirement counselors, if you went in to see them in the private sector, they would tell you that you should plan to retire being able to replace about 75 to 80% of your income with whatever you're going to live off of in retirement. What we've done with the Tier 2 pensions is they're so austere that employees are really retiring because it's the average of your highest 8 years of earnings, not your last year of earnings.
Right.
They're retiring with a pension benefit that's equal to 45 to 50% of their final year of earnings, which is woefully insufficient. So we actually have to find programs to get them to save their own money to supplement it. So we have really changed that equation in pensions over the course of the last 10 years.
We're going to talk about what was that, Joe?
That is making some of that stuff I didn't hear of. That's making substantial steps in the right direction.
There you go.
Give me a little benefit here. The Trib had an article 2-3 days ago. A person served a half a day as a substitute teacher, and he was a lobbyist. And he qualified for something like $100,000 a year pension.
Yeah, and so... So, Joe, let me just, before you even get too deep into that, there is no doubt that looking back over the course of the last 20 years, you would be able to find numerous pension abuses like that. What I would tell you is these are stories of the past, not of the future. In other words, yes, they existed. Yes, people abused pensions. Yes, people did things where they served a half a day and were able to get a pension they weren't entitled to. But going forward, so much of that has been rooted out. And the point is that people, when they talk about the Illinois pension system, focus in on the guy who worked half a day as a substitute teacher and got himself a pension. What they fail to see is that the average pensioner, state pensioner in the state of Illinois, is getting a pension of $38,000 a year, and they don't get Social Security. So the one person is really the outlier, not the average pensioner. And so, you know, we've done those things to address those little problems, but you got to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Joe, I've got to run in a moment.
Might I ask one final question?
All right, you've got 20 seconds. Go.
20, I'll take 15. What's the status of this fellow that qualified for $100,000 a year pension? Oh. I think it was rather recently.
Yes, it was done in so there was a lawsuit about it, and the law upheld his right to that pension, so he is going to get it. And again, there's nothing we can do about the loophole we exploited in the past, but we closed it for those going in the future.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a great evening, Joe. Appreciate it. More after this on 720 WGN. We're going to talk about the fair tax still. We got the diagram. If you're on Lakeshore Drive, you might be able to see it bounce off the building. We're gonna have a PowerPoint and everything. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions about the. It's so funny because I was telling you earlier, you talk about the fair tax and people still want to talk about the pensions.
Absolutely.
I get it. More in a moment. 720 WGN.
More people are leaving Illinois than any other state. We want to know why. Why'd you or your friends leave? Our news clerk's asking that too at WGNradio.com. The answer's at 1:35.
John Williams, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 720 WGN.
Okay, we do have a time for before the news. I thought I had less time, so I want to at least get to one thing that because we'll go into some information about the fair tax when we come back after the news. But one listener says that they are Oh, by the way, Lawrence and Nagel by Butera is Dunning. Thank you very much. That helps me too. My thought on the fair tax is that it will be targeting the people that can most afford the top accountants and accounting firms to get around it, and that definitely includes J.B. Pritzker. Well, they already can get around all the taxes, right? Now.
Yeah, it doesn't change their ability to get around the taxes. And, you know, the federal taxes have a lot more loopholes than the state does. So
I got that sense.
Yeah. When you do your state taxes there, there's not a whole lot of ways to avoid paying those. So
right.
So it's less of a problem.
And then we have another listener, and I saw an article about this earlier today about the exodus of residents from Illinois. I feel the recent limits on deductions for real estate taxes and pending but that's federal, isn't it?
Yes, it was done by the Trump administration.
Yeah,
yes.
That was federal. So, you know, I don't know how I don't own property, but my mom does. She said for the first time in 50 years, she's had to pay so much more in taxes. The highest she's paid in 50 years.
Yeah.
So the pending discussion about a graduated Illinois tax will cause the most wealthy Illinois residents to flee the state at an even higher rate. Also, these wealthy individuals are the ones funding many local charitable organizations that serve those that most need it. So we'll talk more about that because I think that people are worried.
I can explain that in great detail, as you can imagine.
The flowchart. Let's see. We'll take one of Donna. Donna, you have two questions?
I did. I wondered in Chicago, if they keep talking about making it a separate state, what would the border of that be?
Yes, there's a downstate legislator that wants to secede from
five.
There are five legislators?
There are five downstate legislators. We call
Ooh.
Them the Eastern Bloc.
Wow. Yeah. There you go. I don't know what the border... it sounds like just Chicago would... Like Cook County?
They... Cook County is what they're saying, yes.
Yeah.
They want Cook County to be its own state. Yep.
So basically, I'm in a suburb. I'm in Brookfield, and that would be a whole new state.
Yep.
And it would be.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. It would be a travesty for it. It's a great political talking point, but the reality of it is that the greatest disparity between the people who put into the pot and get the least out is the city of Chicago. So Chicago residents put the most into the city coffers and get the least out, and the downstate people put the least in and get the most out. But it sounds good for their constituents who hate Chicago. Yeah.
Thank you, Donna.
Interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, what a fun question. Yeah, I forgot about the secession movement. I had to pay $3,000 more in federal taxes this year, and I'm retired. That's the 312. Oh. That's the kind of music you need to talk about, use when we're talking state politics. Well, that's
Absolutely.
Not politics. We're talking about which direction we're going, and there's some important things going on in our General Assembly in Springfield. And that's another thing I recommend is that you go down and watch the process. Or if you can't go downtown, downstate, you can go to some of the hearings that they have right here in Chicago. Are there going to be any about the fair tax coming up?
Well, I imagine there's going to be quite a bit of stuff about the fair tax. We've got 21 session days in Springfield, and in order to, you know, to meet the governor's goal of getting it on the ballot by 2020, The idea is to pass it by May 31st. So we've got 21 days of session. I mean, 5 weeks, but we're not in session every day. So we've got to get it done by May 31st.
So we're going to talk about the fair tax. And if you want to watch the debates going on, I believe you can go to IL.gov or Illinois.gov.
Yeah, so you can go ILGA.gov, Illinois General Assembly, ILGA.gov.
There's a live feed.
They have a click to a live feed there. You can watch the debates. You can watch the different committee hearings. This committee hearing, pretty sure will take place in the Revenue Committee,
mm-hmm.
And then we'll move to the floor for a full debate, and it will be fireworks. You know, when you started with the little Beastie Boys on the way in here, I immediately thought to myself, you know, in the month of May, Illinois politics is a full contact sport, so it is exciting. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So what do folks need to know, and how can we help them understand what the proposal is, what's on the table?
So the governor has proposed a fair tax. It is a complete reform of the current tax system. The reason being is that Illinois has the eighth most unfair tax system in the country. And what I mean by that is that more than 42 other states, we put a larger burden of funding our government on the backs of the people who can least afford to pay it, middle class, working class, and poor. And we give the wealthy a pretty fair break. This is not a speculation. This is a fact. It is a mathematical fact. We are the eighth most regressive or unfair tax state. So what he said was, let's restructure our system and make it more fair. And he, as he said during the campaign, guys like me should pay more. Okay. And so what he did was he proposed a fair income tax, which is an income tax with graduated rates, just like the federal government and 33 other states, where as you make more money, you pay a higher rate. And as you make less money, you pay a lower rate. And to make the tax system a little bit more affordable. And under his plan that he proposed, his rate structure, people making $250,000 a year or less would receive a tax break under his plan. It would raise the money we would need to close our structural deficit, stop adding to our debt, and really start to balance our system so that we can afford to invest in higher education infrastructure, K through 12 education, essential social services, and not constantly putting ourselves in a situation where we have to keep raising more and more taxes. So it's really a smart thing to do, because if you close that deficit, you're sort of precluding the need for future tax increases.
So a lot of folks are concerned. I mean, I guess anytime you hear the word tax, they think that everything's going up. And I want to ask, what's the percentage of Illinoisans who would be affected by taxes going up under the fair tax plan?
So I'm going to take that question and I'm going to answer it in reverse. The answer is that over 97%, 97.3% of Illinoisans would receive a tax cut under this plan.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's everyone making $250,000 a year or less. And so it's 2.7% of tax filers would see an increase. And what this does is what so many other states have done and that we have failed to do. The growth of our economy has been in the highest income earners. Yeah. And we have failed to capture that growth through revenues. And that's why we've been in these constant financial problems.
I did the tax calculator. And where can people find the tax calculator to find out how this tax would affect them?
You know what? I don't have it in front of me, so you're gonna have to tell me.
www.illinois.gov? I don't know why it came up that way.
I think it's just office. illinois.gov/fair tax calculator.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I got there, but it was on one of your.
It was on one of my boards.
Storyboards.
Yes, it's not in front of me here, but it was one of my storyboards.
It's the fair tax calculator, and it's from the office of governor of J.B. Pritzker. And so it says here, your total taxes owed will decrease $240 under the fair tax.
Oh, uh-huh.
So that's, yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really, and here's the thing, right? We've got a $3 billion. Current budget deficit. There's two ways to close that. One is the institution of this fair tax. The other is to raise the flat tax we currently have. So when you look at that, Patty, and you say you're going to get $240 back,
mm-hmm.
or a $240 break over what our current system is, that's comparing a problem to a solution. Yeah. If you were to compare the solution to the solution, where you're talking about what you would pay under the fair tax versus what you would pay under a higher flat tax, that savings are even more substantial. And in fact, I would guess for you, it's about $750 less that you would pay under the fair tax than the same flat tax increase we would need to solve the deficit.
So there are folks, of course, a lot of skepticism
As there should be.
There you go. So I look forward to, this is what we were talking about before the news, I would look forward to an explanation about our wealthy residents leaving. I'm keenly aware of how this has already caused a near collapse of our high-end residential real estate values on the North Shore and other suburban areas around Chicago, and the downward pressure from the high end is affecting all price ranges negatively.
So what I would say is that it hasn't caused anything because it isn't in effect yet. We haven't even voted on it in the legislature about whether or not we're putting it on the ballot. But there was just a report done by the Better Government Association where they documented that the flat tax increase that we did from 3.75 to 4.95% actually, the number of wealthy filers grew in our state and the number of middle class, working class, and poor left. So the answer is that statistically speaking, the people that are leaving Illinois are the people that we talked about, this unfair tax state where they're being middle class, working class, and poor are being crushed by high taxes and low opportunities. They're leaving. The rich people statistically are not leaving, sure. People leave all the time.
And I think they were talking not about the fair tax, but about the real estate taxes. Is what,
sure. Yeah. And that's an issue, you know. And so here's what we find is that when people who make more than $1 million a year, again, statistically, leave Illinois, the five top states that they go to, two of them, everyone would say, aha, I told you, Florida and Texas, right? Because they have no income taxes. That's why they're leaving. But the other three, and in fact, 1, 2, and 5 of the top five states are, in order, California, New York, and Hawaii, all three of which have substantially higher tax rates. So rich people move for many reasons, but the taxes that are imposed in that state are not a primary driver.
So, again, this is 847, very passionate about the conversation, and they say that the wealthy already pay a higher rate as a result of their property taxes. In our community and many others, the most wealthy pay $30,000 to $80,000 a year in property taxes, mostly for schools, and this allows the less fortunate to attend the same schools. I'm not sure.
That's an interesting spin on it. I would say it's not correct.
I think this is probably one we can do by email. Do you want me to get their emails?
Sure. I'd be happy to explain it to them. Yes. So the bottom line is that the wealthier you are, the less a percentage your housing costs are. So if you are very poor, your housing costs are probably 50 to 60% of your income. When you're very wealthy, it's 10% of your income. So that they pay higher property taxes and a dollar amount does not mean that they pay a higher percentage of their income.
And then 630, and I think this goes to more like cynicism, right? And this is a lot of times people withdraw from the process because they feel as though they've been sold a bill of goods before. Yeah. And I was talking to somebody, they were talking about how, you know, the taxpayers are not to blame for where we are. If you don't participating though and holding your elected officials accountable, whether it's your governor or your legislator, if you're not in the office finding out how they vote, we all kind of play a role in who we elect to make choices for us, because whether it's the deficit, whether it's the pension problems, these are not things that happened overnight. It did not happen just with the Democrats in power or just with the Republicans in power. This has been going on since the late 1930s with our obligations to those we've made a promise to. So one of the things is, this is more of a, I think, a generalization that people maybe misremember or misunderstood. The 630 says, hey, the lottery was supposed to pay for schools. Gas tax was supposed to pay for roads. I never understood the lottery as something that was going to pay for schools. I understood it as money from the lottery would go toward schools.
Yes.
And that's going to be a percentage of it, not all of it.
Yes, and that's the case. So that's my favorite question that I get in politics. Mm-hmm. Yes, the lottery was supposed to help pay for education. The reality of it is that we take in about $600 million a year from the lottery, and our current spend on education, I believe, is $8.6 billion. Mm. So that $8.6 billion, 0.6 comes from the lottery. And so, you know, it helps, but it's a long way away from paying for. Gas taxes are supposed to pay for the roads. We have one of the lowest gas taxes, state gas taxes, in the country, and woefully insufficient to actually fund the infrastructure investment that we need to improve our roads.
I want to thank our listeners for joining the conversation, and I will do you want me to pass along their email?
I'd be happy to respond. Yeah,
excellent. A lot of our texts coming in, again, very passionate responses, and I'm so glad that you guys were participating. We're going to bring in, we're also going to bring in Elizabeth Alfano. Let's see what she thinks about fair tax and, oh, yeah, and veganism. She is the awesome vegan.
I love it.
I'm excited. Nice.
Can't wait to chime in on that.
Are you vegan?
I've been vegan for the past 50 days almost.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, let's find out how it's been going.
I know.
Yeah. I should give it a chance.
Give it a chance.
I don't want to tell you what I ate on the way here.
Don't tell me.
I had to go through a drive-thru.
Oh, no.
There aren't a lot of vegan choices.
Let's go on break. All
right. Let's go on break. More after this on 720 WGN. Before I introduce our next guest, I do want to let our listeners know, we have had shows where we talk about issues that are going on statewide, and we'll bring in one person from each party. I haven't had the opportunity yet to get that together, a lot of schedules to coordinate. Representative Martwick, who is carrying the bill, had a town hall meeting today, and it occurred to me that it would be great to have him fresh out of that forum and tell you about it. And next week, I will get an opponent of the bill, most likely one of our favorites. Representative Batnick is a regular on the show, and I know that there are other legislators. Maybe we'll do a budget crisis corner with you and Batnick one night. Maybe we'll set up something where you guys can discuss it on the air together.
I'd love that.
I think that's the way to go. So yeah.
I'll be the referee.
You could absolutely.
Yes, as Jennifer Tilly.
I like that very fantastic. Much. That is Matt Fagerholm, who is the assistant editor for RogerEbert.com,
yes.
And you can find his publication, IndieOutlook.com, online as well. Representative yes. Martwick in studio with us from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th, and we welcome to the studio Elizabeth Alfano. She is the host of Awesome Vegans podcast and the Celebrity Dinner Party Event Series, which Matt was like, I know you from that.
That's right. My boss, yes. Chaz Ebert, was a guest. She had a great time.
So, yeah, it was super fun. I remember that show. That was a good one.
That's excellent. And you came in and you said it's a great time to be
God.
A vegan.
Oh,
so much going
my
on.
My God. Okay, first of all, let me start with the royal news.
What's the royal news?
The baby, the Duchess of Sussex, is about to have a baby, and they're going to raise their baby vegan.
Oh.
Wow. Oh, ho-ho. Not just oh. That is oh-ho-ho. Come on. That's big. That's big news,
that is big
folks.
Big news, yes.
Yeah, so very exciting. So that's just sort of like the royal tip of the iceberg, but so much is going on. Have you guys heard about the Impossible Burger?
Yes, going to Burger King? No.
Yes. Okay,
yes.
So they're trying.
Yes.
They're testing it in Burger King, 59 Burger Kings in Missouri, and then they're going to roll out to 7,200.
And what
burger
is this?
Cakes.
What wow. is this burger? What is
okay,
these?
Okay, it is not the Impossible Burger. Uh-huh. It's the Impossible Whopper. So
oh.
that's their like 2.0 of it.
Oh,
and
okay.
what's most exciting about this is that the director of public relations for the Missouri Farm Bureau, Eric Boll, went into one of these McDonald's and he sauntered up and he's like, "All right, well, I'm going to try one of these things, see what it's all about." And he went on the record as saying, it is indistinguishable from meat, and my clients better wake up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think what they should do is just serve everybody the Impossible Whopper, not even tell them that's what they were having.
Yeah.
That would be,
he actually
that would
said
be
that.
Terrible. That would be terrible. Before we go continue with the excitement, I forgot to read this text, and that was for you and me, Vivian.
Yeah.
Which is that song you played, the BC Boys coming in.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was the BC Boys. Representative Martwick mentioned it. Which BC Boys song was that when we started after the midnight news?
Ooh, do you happen I'll to know? Tell you right
we
now.
We will find
Hold
out. On. Sorry
I
about
will
this.
Find out.
I have a remarkably.
I got it.
I don't know music very well. So which one is it?
Boys No Sleep.
Boys till No Brooklyn. Sleep, which is perfect.
Boys No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Till Brooklyn.
That's what it is.
They would have found Boys, do you know a lot of music?
And not the Beastie Boys, but I mean, some music. I don't know.
I like the music. She's like, please don't test me on Beastie Boys. I know.
Let's stop that right
I
now.
Know Impossible Whopper. I don't know Beastie Boys. I'm with you on that. I don't know either very well. Let me live somewhere else for just a moment because we'll come to the Whopper, Impossible Whopper again in a second because I think it's great news. I was very excited. Actually, Red Robin has the Impossible Burger
really?
On their menu as well. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
And I know that because I accidentally took my boys to a Red Robin on a Friday, and they're Catholic, and I was like, oh, we'll leave, and then the manager was like, no, don't
Hold
go. Yeah, yeah, we have the Impossible Burger. And we have the best. What did he? Fish and chips,
awesome.
Which is not. But
do they
but
also have the endless fries? Because that's
yes.
what I
that's
I
what
enjoy.
They do. Yeah, they definitely have that
yes.
in spades.
But let me ask about raising a baby vegan because that seems like would be very hard for folks who are on a budget and sort of catch as catch can when you're running around and I mean you could do like all veggies but replacement protein and things like that. I'm just trying to remember. Look, I made a lot of stuff from scratch. I used to make my own homemade pureed baby food and put it in an ice tray, and mm-hmm. so I'd have the cubes and, you know, warm them up for him and stuff like that. But I'm just wondering about those who are on a budget.
Yeah,
it's one thing to be a royalty and go like this, and we shall be vegan.
but what makes you say that veganism is expensive? I mean, it can be expensive if you go buy the Impossible Burger at a restaurant, and, you know, but it doesn't. Vegetables aren't any more expensive. Neither are rice and beans or anything like
it's
that.
It's not. I don't know. I think that maybe there is that sort of idea that it's more expensive.
I think that idea was like also from 1970 when vegans only hugged trees.
Okay.
Yeah. But otherwise, you know, vegetables, rice, beans, these sort of things, lentils, they're, you know, really inexpensive, actually. So.
Yeah. And so a listener backs me up, says that I'm right about budget. That's what I think.
Yes, but what makes you think that? Because it's just veggies, rice, and beans and.
Right.
Nuts, and I mean,
I know, but like, if I get a pound of ground beef as opposed to a box of, you know, Morningstar
lentils or I mean, because you would cook the beef, right? So right. we're assuming that you're cooking it and not buying pre-made stuff.
Right. A bag of lentils is 99 cents.
Right. Yeah. With rice. Dice up some mushrooms in that, and it's all going to be nice and savory and healthy and all that sort of stuff.
It's all in how you season it, too. Like, you can make this like meat almost.
Absolutely.
It's like I've eaten beets that taste like a good, you know, sirloin.
Yes.
If it's done well.
I will say to that, cumin, everyone. Cumin. Mm. So if you like to cook at home, paprika and cumin are things that really help turn the spices into tasting like meat. So I make a serious vegan meatloaf. Just saying.
Mm. I have a question for you in the vein of spices. You know, I have this new passion for a company called Penzi's Spices.
Mm.
Have you tried Penzi's?
I have not.
You should look up Penzi's.
Oh, gosh, I will.
They're like my favorite thing.
Ooh.
And they have like great, if you want to send, have you tried Penzi's?
Absolutely.
They are the best.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're
and they're very passionate about the community. And
I'm writing this down.
Penzeys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, apostrophe S, but yeah. my mother-in-law bought me a gift box years ago, and for a while, you know, I tried to like cobble together stuff that was similar. No. Nobody makes some of the chili ingredients as well as Penzi's does.
Oh, I love
and
that.
All kinds of stuff, yeah.
Super great tip. I always think spices are such a good gift, you know?
Yes.
Such an original good gift.
Oh, and then I've gone and they've got the best vanilla. They've got the like all different varieties of cinnamon, you know, like Indonesian. You've got Mexican cinnamon. Yeah.
Oh, Ceylon.
You just have to know how to cook it.
Yes, that too.
And that's the thing. It's like, I feel like it's very time consuming, you know, when it comes to cooking everything.
Right.
Right. So I feel like a lot of listeners that are listening right now, they're like, I don't really have that time to, you know, to just cook everything and you just put it all in a big pot and, you know, just stir it up and eat it. I'd rather just go to, you know, Burger King and get a Whopper.
Right. So, okay, you can get the Impossible Whopper for sure, but then you got to kind of weigh your health benefits, right? So always when you have control over your own food, it's going to be the healthiest option for you. One of the things that I do to keep the time down is I designate one afternoon to cook. So like Sunday afternoon. And that's when I'll make like a big quinoa salad and I'll make rice and beans and I'll have pasta and I'll kind of plan out the week.
Oh, so you prepare before.
I just prepare everything on Sunday.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
And then of course there's going to be one or two nights I'm out with friends and I'm, you know, and of course at work I just, you know, catch can or I've got fruit or whatever. So, I usually plan out like four or five meals at home and they're just pre-made because I did it on Sunday.
I always like the idea of planning it out and I always say that I will. The same thing.
I know. I do the same thing. Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to be good this week.
I'm also going to do yoga every day. Let's take a break here. More conversation with our guests when we come back on 720 WGN. There's Tom Hush in the producer's booth. We were all distracted because Tom Hush was the producer who originally introduced me to Matt Fagerholm from RogerEbert.com. So he's wearing what?
And he's wearing a great shot on his sweater. Oh, okay, they'll buy one. There you go.
Come say hi, Tom. Come on.
It's been a
long time.
Yeah. Hello. You know what you can't do is listen to you guys, your recommendations, and then go home at 2 in the morning and watch Kill Bill. That's not a good unwinding movie.
No.
At 2 in the morning. I'm like, hold on a second. What was that?
It won't put you to bed.
No. I was like, do I stay up and watch the next one? which the answer is also no. Next one. It is time now for our news, our conversation with Elizabeth Alfano, Representative Martwick, and Matt Fagerholm continues when we come back. Ooh, Whitney Houston.
Yes, I was just going to ask you.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to make sure.
On May 11th, we will actually play Patty's appalling lack of musical knowledge at Nerdfest at Stage 773.
Awesome. I'm going.
They're doing a whole tech. There are Elliot Serrano, John Craig, Willie Opper, Candace Opper are all putting together a playlist. And I you know, and we're also putting together a game for a live version of it here on the air. So Paul Farvar is working on that. I can't remember what it is.
I can't wait for that, honestly.
Some people really get a kick out of it. Some people just can't believe it. I had a friend of mine almost throw himself out of a moving car because
gosh.
I didn't know the songs that were playing. He was like, come on, get it. You're not, this isn't, are you just messing with me? Even the Uber driver was, he could not believe it because he was like Bluetoothing a playlist and it was all 80s music. And he goes, come on, you know who this is? And I go, no, who is it? He goes, Flock of Seagulls. I'm like, I'm never going to guess. Flock, it's never going to escape my lips. Am I ever going to say Flock of Seagulls? Now I know it's Iran. Now I'll know the song just because he was so dismissive. Yeah. We are live.
That reminds me of The Wedding Singer.
Oh,
that's the only thing I would know of Flock of Seagulls actually is The Wedding Singer reference, not actually their music.
That's funny.
I saw the Flock of Seagulls perform live.
Did you really?
I swear to God.
Wow, that's pretty classic.
Those crazy haircuts they used to have. Did you ever see those crazy hair? You did not.
She didn't know who they were recently.
In the 80s, they were a band and they made their hair look like they were birds. I'm going to look this up.
I'm looking right now. That is
I saw a flock of seagulls along Lake Michigan. So that's as far as I go on this. That's good.
That's Matt Fagerholm from RogerEbert.com. He's assistant editor and he's a publisher of IndieOutlook.com. Representative Robert Martwick, who saw a flock of seagulls live and is looking for a picture of their haircut. He represents the Rootin Tootin 19th District. And Elizabeth Alfano, the host of Is Awesome Vegans.
Yep.
And Celebrity.
Doesn't he look like an owl?
Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Look at that.
He looks like an owl.
That hair is going to take flight, like right
there. Yes, that is impressive.
Amazing.
They should have spent more time on their songwriting instead of their haircuts then, I guess. Oh, that's just mean. That's just mean of me.
Ouch.
Now you, Vivian, I don't know why I said it that way. You, Vivian, on the stand.
Hello, how are you?
You have been a vegan for Lent.
Yes, I have. Almost 50 days.
Wow.
Have you ever gone for a long period of time?
Only for Lent.
Only for Lent.
Yeah, I try to do it once a year. But this year, I really tried, you know, because I challenged myself this time around. Before, I would just do meat.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I incorporated dairy as well. So I know it was very hard.
Really, you found it hard?
I found it hard because I'm Greek. Okay,
I was going to ask culturally. I think culturally there are some differences when it comes to trying to make that change, especially depending on especially because of how you grew up, what you're used to, what you're accustomed to.
Greek food is amazing.
So thank you very much.
I should make you my vegan gyros because it's so good. And we're back to spices. It's all about spices. I use seitan from Upton's Naturals, a company right here in Chicago. They're so awesome.
Okay.
And then I spice it, you know, just spice it like gyros. So lots of soy and some smoked mushrooms. And
I love how everybody just thinks of gyros when it comes to
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. But all I know is I can make them.
How about moussaka? Can you make
that? There you go. You know what? Actually, if you take the bechamel out of moussaka, I can have it. That's a vegan dish, actually.
And you were saying that you felt better.
I did. I feel clean. Does that sound good? Because I feel like it's like a weird adjective to use.
But you're calling us dirty, is what you're saying.
Yeah, no.
That's exactly what we're saying.
I feel no inflammation. I don't feel bloatiness at all. I just feel very clean.
Can I say something about inflammation?
Yes.
I get the feeling that I've never been not inflamed to know what inflammation is. Like, I don't know. Like, to explain what people mean.
The anti-inflammatory diet is what the is I understand.
Right. So,
thing.
So how do you feel when you don't feel inflamed?
So you feel lighter. You feel, I don't know if you've been sleeping better, but you feel like you move better. You have more energy. A lot of people, I mean, you were saying that maybe that wasn't the case for you, but most people say that they have a lot more energy and that they feel lighter. They move better. So
and don't you feel like you don't have to eat as much either, too? Like if it's more satisfying.
You're more efficient, aren't you?
You can feel full and satisfied, whereas fast food, you just have to keep eating and just never feel satisfied.
I'm laughing because we just got a text that says Greek food rocks, #WeAreMoreThanGyros, and that comes from from George Karzis, the owner of the Gale Street Inn, where the world's greatest ribs are served.
Oh, that's
I remember the Gale Street Inn. Oh, my word.
There you go.
But he's got vegan. Come on, Gale Street Inn. You've got something vegan.
Absolutely.
They have good
orzo.
Ooh.
I usually get that with my salmon.
Ooh.
Now, I know that's not vegan, though.
No, salmon's not vegan, but orzo is.
Seafood, yes.
Orzo is so super yummy.
Funny, but you mentioned vegan gyros, and of course, we talked about gyros and...
Now I want euros.
No, I want meat.
People I know who are are really ethnically Greek don't eat euros.
Right. It's mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
kind of true, actually.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah. Well, it's a friend of mine who I worked in the Cook County State's Attorney's office with a while ago. His dad was a retired restaurateur. And I told him, I said, oh, yeah, we always go to your friend's restaurant. I said, I love the euros. And he goes, I don't eat euros.
I love the accent.
And I said, really? And he said, I've seen it made. I don't eat
euros. Wow. The 815 says, vegetarian for almost 50 years, vegan wannabe. Yes, it takes time, but well worth it. And really, what's the alternative? Thank you so much for the topic. And I think they were checking out to go to bed, and they will listen to the rest on podcast, which everyone can do. If we're keeping you awake and we're being a little too loud, you got to turn it down, and maybe you drift off or you have to get out of the car. Please park first. But I'm sorry, I've never in 5 years said that. But you can find my show if you have a smart speaker. You can say play the Patty Vasquez Show. You can also sign up and subscribe to my podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts and leave your feedback. So, and by the way, hi to Paul in Maryland, who I know listens to us on podcast. He had to start going to bed earlier. And that was nice of him to let us know. Now, you came in and we talked a little bit about the royal baby being vegan and the royal whopper. No, the impossible
the
whopper.
The impossible whopper.
At Burger King. More royalty, which, by the way.
Yes, so. Right. Exactly. Okay. So, and then the director of public relations for the Missouri Farm Bureau gave it a thumbs up. So that to me is like kind of earth shattering. That says like, okay, there's going to be a shift. So I think that's exciting. But just like what you were saying, so it's not just Burger King. It's Red Robin and Blaze Pizza now has some plant-based options. Oh. And Nestle's is getting into plant-based stuff. Tyson Chicken.
That's confusing. Wow. Yeah. Yes.
They're starting their own plant-based line. Del Taco, all of their 580 stores across the U.S., they now have the Beyond Burger. So, you know, you're just seeing Carl's Jr. has the Beyond Burger 2.0. Pieology is adding plant-based options. You know, and Chipotle's always had Sofritas. So you're just seeing more and more really mainstream options, you know, just an inexpensive fast food, this kind of accessibility.
And I think that's part of it, too. I think that's what people like me sort of drift towards thinking it's either more expensive or complicated. The more it's accessible in the way that we always get, you know, whether it's a drive through. Again, I won't tell you where I stopped on the way. And I feel
that bad, huh?
It was so good, though.
Okay, well, let me just tell you this. While you're sinking into your seat about how good it is,
I know.
And we talk about inflammation. So the Journal of Nutrition just came out with a study that vegans live longer. And the reason they live longer is because they have more antioxidants in their body. Did you guys see this study? More antioxidants in their body. And reading my statistics here. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And then I have to look up the other one. I don't know where it went. They have more antioxidants. Oh, and more anti-inflammatory properties in their body.
Oh.
So the study was 850 people, and they did 5 different groups, like vegan or vegetarian, or they eat fish but not other meat, or they do eat a little bit of meat, or they eat full-on meat. So 5 different categories. Mm. And vegans came out with the least amount of inflation and the most antioxidants and living the longest lives. So feeling the best. So there you go.
Amazing. Now, I had a whole conversation in the Czech Republic last year with these brilliant artists from New Zealand where it's like, yes, it's like the daughter in the family started eating vegan, then converted the parents. And that's how it works. There'll be someone in the family that starts this.
Yes.
And then it keeps going. And I'll just say it. My hero right now is the Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg. She's incredible, and she turned her whole family vegan because it's helpful for the. I mean, this has to be the future. Ultimately, is alternate ways of eating, alternate ways of, you know, living, driving.
Yes, I mean, so if you go
creating energy,
the UN climate change report, it'll say in no uncertain terms, right in that report, which is god awful to read, I'll say. But if you can make your way to section 2, it'll say that we need to eat plants, get away from animal agriculture, and that animal agriculture is the most devastating thing for the environment. So, you know, Greta, it really, that's why she's vegan, is because of the environmental impacts. So a lot of people do it for their health, but a lot of people are starting to do it for the environment.
Yes.
You know, we mentioned some of our favorite restaurants. We were talking a little bit earlier. You know, when you go out, I'm guessing you seek out places that are either strictly vegan or, you know, have the options of vegan. Do you?
You know, it's become so commonplace in cities like Chicago, New York, LA, the big cities. So I was in Oak Park the other day, and I can't even remember the restaurant. It was just your average old place, you know. And I said, oh, hey, what do you have for vegans? And they're like, hold on, I'll get you the vegan menu.
Right.
And I was like, boom. I mean, that's huge. You know, they weren't saying, because, you know, back in the day, people would say, oh, I'll take the chicken out of this dish.
Right.
You're like, well, that's not really a dish then. You know, like, I want a thing for me. And they had a whole menu. So I just think you're seeing in metropolises like this, you know, you're seeing more and more options everywhere. So
it's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And because it's about the future.
Yes.
And I think for families, that I mean, it also maybe just take a day, you know, where you have Meatless Monday, or you know, find a way to sort of start being in tune or aware of how you consume food. Right.
Yes, I mean, it's always nice to be aware of your own food source. It starts you thinking, where does it come from? Maybe you'll end up doing a little bit more cooking. You'll start thinking where you buy from. You know, you've mentioned, you were very kind to mention my podcast, Awesome Vegans, which is right here on WGN Radio.
Of course.
But if people are looking for recipes, hit up my website, because it's filled with vegan recipes. So super easy. I don't have time to cook either, so a lot of stuff I just throw into a bowl, put it in the oven, and take a shower. When I get back from the shower, it's ready.
That's great. And I do know better, because it's just been a while. I don't cook as much as I used to. And one of my husband's favorite dishes is a meatless pie I used to make from the Linda McCarthy book, which was a vegetarian book, but the dish itself is vegan.
She was diehard. She was one of the originals, along with her husband, Paul McCartney. Yeah. Love, love, love.
Oh, yeah.
Was she vegan or vegetarian?
I thought she was vegan.
She might have been.
They were vegan and really sort of in the original mindset of vegan for the animals. So not for the health or the environment, which are two huge bonuses, but they were really vegan for the animals. So I'll just do a quick shout out to my website, so people can find the recipes if they're interested. So ElizabethAlfano.com, pretty easy there. But
did we leave anything on the table? Was there anything else you wanted to make sure people knew about? I don't like to leave anything.
Well, I've got two things. Okay. How much time do I have?
Go ahead.
Really? Okay. So Top Shelf. We all heard about Top Shelf. Well, Top Shelf has a new line of vegan shoes. So you're seeing beyond the food. Well, yes, because people are trying to get away from vegan leather. You know, once you really start thinking about the animal industry and, you know, the environmental impact isn't just from food. It's also leather, making leather tanneries. God awful for the environment. So their shoes are made out of things like pineapple leather and orange leather.
What?
I know. So now, I haven't tried these shoes, but the pictures are so super cute. So really,
I want to see an orange leather jacket right now. Can we bring up a picture of this? It just sounds incredible.
We'll have to find one. So I don't know if they're doing leather jackets, but they're doing shoes for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, well, hold off on the leather jackets. Someone's doing pineapple leather jackets, I'm sure.
Pineapple leather's actually been around. It's not like Top Shelf first.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting time. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I've been in this for a while now, and sometimes I'll get some pushback, and people will say, like, this isn't the way we roll, and this is not right, and all this kind of stuff. But really, what's very exciting to me is that, to me, this is the most American of things, because America's always out in front for innovation.
Right.
And so we have a world crisis on our hands. We need a solution. Yep. And we're doing that. Impossible Burger, Beyond Burger, we're making those changes.
That's amazing.
It's all about American innovation. I think it's like you couldn't be more American than
It's all about distributing the information too. If you don't know something, then it's harder for you to engage in becoming a vegan or a vegetarian or anything, really.
And to make it usable.
Exactly.
To actually know how
I
can implement this in my everyday life.
Absolutely. So the more you know, the better.
Yeah. By the way, H&M debuts vegan pineapple leather jackets. The chain's new collection features
Amazing! I'm getting one. Wow. I'm getting one. That's it.
Let's go to H&M tomorrow, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I wonder if they smell. Because when you think of a pineapple jacket, don't you think like, ooh, I wonder if it has a scent that comes with it.
Could be a nice scent.
Could be a nice one. Yes, I agree.
If you're going to hang out with some, if you want to go hang out at the Gale Street Inn, they've got roasted vegetables, quinoa, Brussels sprouts, mixed, you know, all the great.
Of course they do, because they're wonderful.
Yes, exactly.
We love you, Gale Inn. I get
Gale Street Inn, excellent.
I wish I knew this 40 days ago.
Well, don't stop being vegan just with the end of Lent. Keep at it.
I'll try.
You'll try.
No promises.
Fair enough. But I think you'll see when you go back to meat, if you do that, it'll be very hard on your system.
Yeah, you I think so.
Well, Elizabeth Alfonso was like, it's going to be very hard.
Are you sure?
Are you sure?
I just won't tell you guys.
Yeah. Well, you'll do whatever's good for you. You know, I think your body will be the ultimate telltale.
Let's take a break here. We're about to wind down. When we come back, tell me something good. 312-981-7200. Again, 312-981-7200. Let us know what you're happy about tonight, what you're proud of. At the end of the day, no matter what happens, there's still something to be grateful for. More after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Patty Vasquez Show.
Follow me on Twitter, Patty Vasquez, CHI.
On 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me, yeah.
I have kind of a little interesting thing that happened today. You know, we get packages here at WGN Radio, and sometimes it'll be a book from a publisher. We get a lot of nice letters from listeners. And I received today a rosary bracelet from a listener named Mary, who saw it and thought of my sons. And it's really this cute little bracelet. So thank you, Mary. I did receive it. Just want to let everybody know. It's not.
Oh, that's so pretty.
Isn't that adorable? It's really,
that's really pretty.
So nice.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
So let me just read the note. I'm a listener to your show. This might seem a bit odd, but I purchased this rosary bracelet and the saint on it is a saint who helps and protects comedians. I'm not sure. I don't know which saint
that
is.
What's the saint who protects comedians?
I have to look that up. So thank you. It was by mistake, but I looked up the saint and thought of you. You always talk so lovingly about your boys. If you don't want it, that is fine. I do want it. I think it's lovely. I actually have some jewelry that this goes with. Stay happy, Mary. Oh, it's Saint Genesius. So there you go.
Genesius. Yeah, yeah. That was my saint name back when I was Catholic.
Really?
Yes. It was the patron saint of actors. It was fantastic.
Well, there you go. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So thank you
that's
so much.
That's so cool. That was so thoughtful.
That was a really sweet and unique surprise to receive today. So thank you so
that's
much.
Lovely. Yeah,
that's lovely.
You
really
you had something that's also related to some of the conversation we were having.
Yeah, before I hopped in, I think you guys were talking about some legal stuff. Is that right? Some
laws? Policy.
Oh, he was. He's the master.
Yes. He's the master. Okay, so I want to say shout out, and maybe this is what I'm grateful for. I love it when politicians, I feel, are really sort of following with their heart. So shout out to Linda Holmes. She is an Illinois senator, and she has just gotten through the Illinois Senate Bill 241, which would amend the Food and Drug and Cosmetics Act to prohibit the importation or sale of any cosmetic products or ingredients that are used on animal testing as of 2020.
I love that.
So I love that, and it's going to hit the House. So if people...
It is in the House, and it's going to be carried by John Carroll, Representative John Carroll from Northbrook. Great advocate for the bill.
That's yeah, tough. So I think I'm hopeful, but of course the great thing about politics in the United States is that we all have a voice. So if you would like this to pass, if you don't want to see animal testing for cosmetics, make sure you let your representative know.
Yeah. Go to openstates.org to find out who your representative is so you can call or email their office. So, excellent.
Do it.
By the way, the 312 says, my something good is I have options and I can leave Illinois and its drama behind, but I'm a signals travel at night and will still tune into the overnight shows.
That's sweet. So,
wow.
Always have the show.
Thank you to the 312. Matt, do you want to give us something good?
Yes. If you want to experience, now I'm going to sound like a critic because I am. If you want to experience 105 minutes of pure joy, go to the Red Twist Theater Friday night or Saturday night this weekend and see Her Land. I just saw it. It's brilliant. This young playwright, Grace McLeod, wrote it. My brilliant cousin, Marcy Mancati's in it. And a rising star from Northwestern University, Simran Ball. I mean, seriously, it's just a lovely coming-of-age story. This young girl befriending these older ladies. And it's just a joy. It's one of those intimate theater venues where you just feel like you're just there, eavesdropping on these lives. And it's just endearing and laugh-out-loud funny. And it's great.
And the name again?
It's called Her Land.
Her Land.
Her Land. And it's an extension now because it was so acclaimed and people loved it. So it's playing a couple extra days up until Easter. So
outstanding.
Check it out.
Thank
it's
you
great.
So much for that.
Yep.
Awesome.
Representative Martwick, do you want to tell us something good?
You know, I'm really basking in the afterglow of my town hall meeting. It's the third town hall meeting we had about the fair tax. And people are, and look at just the conversation we had here, how many people texted and called, sent emails. So, you know, I feel great when people are engaged and getting involved and they're weighing in. These issues affect everybody, and it's great to see people participating in the process.
And yes. if you do you have any more town halls coming up?
Yes, May 6th, I believe, we're going to do one in Logan Square.
There you go. So find your legislator, and if not, you can follow Representative Martwick. These are open to the public. You don't Absolutely. Have to live in the community where they are. This is a statewide policy. So.
Two of my friends from Wheaton came to listen to the
there you go.
Town hall today.
That's Martwick on Facebook, M-A-R-T-W-I-C-K, Representative Robert Martwick from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th. We have Joe on the line for something good. Hey, Joe, what do you want to tell us?
Yeah, Patty, I'm on the landline. I hope it don't echo.
It's okay. You're talking, though. Go ahead.
Super. Okay. I look forward to the day when vegans, vegetarians, and meat eaters can live in harmony.
Yay! I like how you roll, sir.
Outstanding.
Everything in moderation.
There you go. Thanks, Joe. Have a great night.
Adios.
Take care. How about you, Vivian?
So this is something that I've been working on for the past couple of weeks, where I substitute the words I have to and I need to and I want to with I get to. So I get to go to work. I get to go shopping. I get to go out with my friends. I get to be here.
I love it.
Yeah, and it kind of changes your perspective on life.
That's fabulous. That should be my mantra. This should be everyone's
mantra.
Yeah,
like you wake up in the morning and when someone calls you, they're like, hey, you know, what are you doing today? I have to go to work. No, you get to go to work.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm incorporating that as of right now.
Yes. All right. Yes. All right.
I get to go to the break. More after this.